Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Tuesday to y'all, but it certainly feels like Monday to me. Hey, Bob, where were you last night? Well, let me tell you. We didn't have Moran Monday last night because I was at a meeting over across the river about the massive mountaintop removal nightmare operation that a coal company from India hopes to gin up to blow my county to kingdom come. I mean, it just is what it is. That's where I was. Tell you a little bit about it. It was actually kind of, well, not kind of. It was genuinely frightful to behold what it is they have in store for us. This coal company from India is, they've got 9 separate permit parcels, somewhere, depending on how you add up the numbers, anywhere. A low end of the spectrum, maybe 2,400 acres, and the high end of the spectrum, somewhere around maybe 5,000 acres that they hope to destroy. And that's just the beginning. The India's answer to the Koch brothers, a pair of thugs by the name of Shashi and Ravi Ruia, have decided that my family, my friends, my colleagues, my neighbors, I don't deserve to live in peace. So they have brought the war on Appalachia to my doorstep. And the purpose of the meeting last night was to get folks interested and organized and informed about what's going on in their backyards. This is truly sickening. It is frightening. And I'll tell you why, and obviously it's frightening. But it has an added personal dimension now based on something that I have recently heard. Based on things that I've said in the past, I don't live down in what is traditionally considered the West Virginia coal fields. Those counties, we are by no means rich in this county, but there are counties in West Virginia that are among the poorest in the entire country. And they are the counties from which comes the most coal. Counties with names like McDowell, Mingo, Boone, Logan, Wyoming. Yeah. Well, my county's not on that list. But it may soon be, because of because of India's answer to the Koch brothers, Shashi and Ravi Ruia, who have bought up coal holdings all over the world, including Australia and the United States, and don't give a tinker's damn what they do to the people who live here anymore. Than Indian coal companies give a tinker's damn about what they do to people in India. I read a fascinating piece by Jeff Biggers, an interview, just a couple of days ago, with a gentleman by the name of Bulu Imam. And Bulu Imam is fighting a solitary-ish struggle against the depredations of the coal industry in his own homeland. You can see the interview, if you would like, at League of India, leagueofindia.com. It bills itself as the center-right liberal magazine. I don't really know what that means, to be quite honest with you. Center-right liberal. But what the upshot of the article is, and the interview by Jeff Biggers, is that coal is preying on people wherever they exist on this planet. Abu Imam in India's coal fields. It is the area in discussion is Jharkhand province. And Bulu Imam is director of the Sanskriti Research Center in Hazaribagh. He is also coordinator of the Karanpura campaign. For 25 years, he has been working against what are called their open cast strip coal mines. Bulu Imam, as Jeff Biggers notes, is also the convener of India's National Trust for Art and Cultural Heritage. You see, one of the things that's going to happen in India, where they're blowing Jharkhand province to kingdom come, they are disappearing, and that's really the only way to describe it. They're disappearing tribal art of indigenous peoples who are there to this day, if you can imagine. Asked by Robert Wallace, opening in London at the Brunei Gallery in the School of Oriental and African Studies in April of this year, just a month away. Jharkhand province is the Appalachia of India, if you compare it to, say, the coal reserves of Appalachia. It lies in the eastern portion of the Indian nation. The open cast mining, of which Bulu Imam protests, is very similar to what you and I recognize as mountaintop removal. There are 30 of these massive hells on earth going in Jharkhand province. And this interview with Bulu Imam is very, very informative and much to be recommended. You know, I remember when ungodly anger blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas in Afghanistan out of nothing more than their religious hatred of anything that wasn't them. Superstition, fear, ignorance, they all go hand in hand, and they are all handmaidens of hatred. And so it was that they dynamited and dynamited until they had utterly destroyed those magnificent statues in that valley in Bamiyan, Afghanistan. Well, that was done for religious fear and superstition. What will be done in Jharkhand province is done for, and you can make your determination one way or the other, is done for something nastier or perhaps less objectionable than fear and superstition. It's done for profit and nothing but profit. There are a native people in Jharkhand province named the Adivasis. They are indigenous to the area. They are the first dwellers. Their ancestral art, Bulu Imam says, have made the valley famous throughout the world and drawn international attention to it. The valley, the Karanpura Valley, is watered by 37 streams that the coal industry will poison there. There are 14 separate rock art sites that date back to the Mesolithic period, as well as the Chalcolithic era. and it's all slated for destruction because it does not matter in the grand scheme of the grasping, grubbing, greedy yearning for more unholy profit on the part of coal producers. Just doesn't matter if profit is in the mix. At one point, our good friend Jeff Biggers asks Bulu Imam, what is the impact of the mining on local populations, especially for women and children? He answers, the mining impact on local populations, especially women and children, is horrendous, since the people are living in a state of fear and daily traumatic displacement and have no means of survival as their agricultural lands and forest resources are being destroyed in huge swaths daily, which is a matter of great concern for all those in the world interested in protecting the rights of women and the girl child. You may draw your own conclusions from what I have written of what state of tribal women and children in the valley must be. This is a humanitarian disaster of the first order. And yet, had you ever heard of the ongoing nightmare in India's Jharkhand province? Because I got to tell you, I hadn't. I get so focused on what's going on around me here that sometimes it feels as if this is the only place on earth that is being tormented to get at the reserves of carbon underneath it. But I have to sort of pursue on planet Earth. Some human being is being tormented for it. That's the truth. That is factual. You know, I've been on protests and demonstrations over the years, and I've heard coal miners and Massey wives. The Massey wives are the most hateful of the bunch, and they scream, "Well, why don't you go live somewhere else? And you're not from around here, and we need our jobs." But now, with this thing going on in Fayette County, my home county of West Virginia, I have a question. Since this is where 8 generations of my people, if you're counting the white folks, and what little dribbling, drabbling drop of Native American may run through these incredibly, run underneath this incredibly pale skin, might mean a thousand generations. What do we say to the workers for that Indian coal company that are blowing Fayette County half to hell? They're not from around here. Now, granted, they are not Indian. The Indian coal company is using locally desperate people, as coal companies do. But they're not from around here. And one's first impulse is to say, hey, why don't you go do this somewhere else? Why don't you go to work in India, Bubba? But I can't say that. I can't say that because once you have become aware of the way that everywhere that coal is recovered, there is torture and torment, you cannot wish torture and torment on another person. It's the kind of awareness that comes from reading, for instance, Mark Twain's The War Prayer, in which he warns, be careful of the blessings you pray for from God, because every time God gives a blessing to you, it means that he is cursing someone else. And that's what it is with coal. It's not okay in Appalachia. It is not okay in southern Illinois, where Jeff Biggers is from. It's not okay where it's happening to my friends and my neighbors in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming or in Montana. It's not okay. because it is not okay to collectively punish entire groups of human beings for collective greed, or perhaps corporate greed, or individualized greed. Whether that greed be manifested by Don Blankenship or Shashi and Ravi Ruia, it ain't okay. And it is most certainly not okay in Jharkhand province, in the Karanpura Valley, where 37 lush streams run or ran, and human beings have successfully lived there since the Neolithic period. Interesting note from by Kath and Kath from Canada in the chat room. FYI, read your shampoo, conditioner, and other cosmetics bottles and packages for the ingredients. Anything that is the letter CI followed by five numbers like CI54321, that's coal tar. Coal tar. Which is another reason that I like to mention on this program. People like our friends at Bubble Genius. Because their products are as safe as you can make a safe soap product. You know, if it's safe for vegans, it's generally going to be pretty safe. So I know that I'm not putting ooky stuff on my skin or in my hair when I'm using products that come from Bubble Genius, bubblegenius.com. It's the kind of thing that we have to look for and be aware of and be cognizant of if we want to be more than mere corporate consumers. If we want to recognize the ethical and the moral component of the purchases that we make on a day-to-day basis. BubbleGenius.com. At least you know you're not going to be putting coal tar in your hair. So I've got an evolving consciousness about all of this, and I am determined to do what I can to try to save this little corner of the world that happens to be where I and mine live. But in talking about that, I want to always, and you may certainly remind me if it looks like I'm slipping, I want to be cognizant of the fact that there are oh so many others being subjected to equal or far worse hells. Here we have coal companies that run roughshod and own the regulatory agencies. At least the regulatory agencies exist. One wonders what sort of regulation there is to protect the native peoples in Jharkhand province in India and the North Karanpura Valley, a deep rift valley over a Jurassic field in the upper part of the basin of the Damodar River, and a coal strata 44 miles in length from east to west and 22 miles in width from north to south in the Chhatra and Hazaribagh districts of North Jharkhand. It's interesting. Coal fields were discovered there by Mr. D.H. Williams in 1848, whom one must presume was British. And nothing was ever the same. And it's getting worse. The nightmare pits of North Karanpura began to be exploited in 1985. That's when Alan Roy approached Prime Minister of India Rajiv Gandhi. He wanted to use open cast mining that would be provided by Messrs. White Industries Limited of Sydney. And that is when Bulu Imam began his struggle. The Pipperwar mine, which was one of the first ones, displaced six villages with approximately five villages and a coal washery nearby. The nearby coal washery displaced two villages. In order to pull out, that wiped out 100 village houses and a dozen square miles of tribal forests. They were, of course, not compensated. Coal companies don't compensate. As anyone who is familiar with the great Appalachian land grab of the late 19th century can tell you. One of the great shocks of looking at a map that shows ownership in Appalachia is to look at a map of the state of West Virginia and realize that almost the entirety of this state is owned by out-of-state corporations like Pocahontas Land Company and Roland Land Company. That was the model in Appalachia. Massive out-of-state, practically untaxed landholders who let go of just enough land to keep people on it to keep their interests working. And then came in when the mood struck them and wiped out whole communities. This is my reality. If you want to talk about other things, I am sure that we most certainly will do that. But I wanted to make clear that I don't just, you know, I wasn't just playing hooky last night. Listening to the conversation, you could feel and in your mind's eye see a nightmare scenario rolling out in front of you because, as I've told you before, there's a little tourism industry here. It centers on whitewater rafting. It is eco-tourism. People going down the roaring rivers. People mountain biking and hiking and fishing and rock climbing through the cliffs of the New River Gorge. And all of that stands to go away, because who wants to do that in poison? Really? There's a Boy Scout camp that is coming here for the jamboree for the entire Boy Scouting world. Would you send your child to an area being subjected to almost nonstop poisonous air and water pollution? Because I wouldn't. I know that because our children live here and they deal with it in that way. They will be blasting this coal company from India. They will be blasting near the drinking water supplies of thousands of households. They will be blasting near the drinking water supply of the entire town of Oak Hill, West Virginia. And if they are allowed to do so and they get away with it, cancer. You see, coal kills. Mountaintop removal kills. It kills whatever is near it. It kills the plant life, it kills the animal life, and it kills the human life. And yet I know we have an uphill struggle. Anybody who's ever tried to organize anything knows you have an uphill struggle. Because in this particular case, well, golly gee, the coal company had a meeting and passed out Walmart and Lowe's gift cards and tool sets and a flat-screen TV to people who live nearest their operations. And some people were pacified by that. And they may stay pacified until the day the doctor looks at them and says, you know, I figure you got a year left to live. You've got cancer. And you're going to die a horrible, terrible, horrifying, miserable death. Of course, doctors don't say that. They say, we'll put you on enough drugs, you'll never feel it. But even then, they can't do that either. You can't completely run away from the misery, an existential misery like that. But that's the challenge that faces us. There's a permit hearing on April the 12th. And we're trying to get people motivated between now and then. Because we don't need any more of the poison that the coal industry brings. Every last bit of evidence is against the coal industry now. In West Virginia, we know, for instance, from an economic standpoint, that for every dollar coal brings, it costs five. And there's no way that you can make that be a profitable situation. At least not on the grand scale. It's only profitable as long as the coal companies get to externalize the costs onto communities in terms of things like poisoned water, poisoned air, cancer, property value degradation, that sort of thing. That's the reality. And we don't, as I said, need any more. I found out today, and I do not have all the details. Two of our three children who remain at home go to high school now. Our third is will finish her eighth grade year this year and move up to the high school. It's not much of a high school. Agnes and I are furiously studying to figure out how we can just say to hell with it and pull our kids out and maybe homeschool them. Materials are hard to come by, though, because when you homeschool your kids, most of the homeschooling materials come from the companies that want to tell you about how, you know, the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor and Lewis and Clark discovered gold at Sutter's Mill and Jesus makes it all better. In other words, nothing that you would actually want to teach to someone who you cared about their education. But it feels like something that is rapidly being forced upon us. And it got a little bit more so today. Because Ferg and Margie, who have, I have mentioned from time to time, been sick of late. Margie had what was diagnosed as mononucleosis for a number of months. She seems to be some better, but she still has things that are oddly wrong and don't go hand in hand with mononucleosis. Our son has begun having some sort of spasmodic seizures in his back, in which he shakes as though he were slain in the spirit at a tent meeting. And it's not from anything that we can readily identify. But I found out something today, because Ferg came home and told me. And he said, Dad, I'm going to have to start carrying whatever I want to drink to school with me. And I said, why is that, son? He said, because we're not allowed to drink the water at school. It's contaminated with diesel fuel and heavy metals. That made me catch my breath. That was frightening. You know, sometimes when you hear things and it just feels like everything starts rushing past you and you're still standing still. And everything, but the stuff that you can see is in this sharp focus. Does this make any sense? That's what I felt. Dad, we can't drink the water. It's full of diesel fuel and heavy metals. I'm trying to find out what I can about the water situation up there. It will be swept under the carpet as quickly as possible. But for how long has that water been filled with diesel fuel and heavy metals? There's an operation directly across the road from the high school that is intimately connected with servicing the mining industry. But water all around here. Well water, groundwater, has components of that in it. And some questions should be asked. Diesel fuel? Diesel fuel? Yes, diesel fuel. Diesel fuel is used, of course, to fuel many of the machines that operate on mountaintop removal jobs. It's used in underground mining as well. It's also a critical component, as it was at the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, of incredibly powerful explosives. A mixture of ammonium nitrate, fertilizer, and fuel oil. Ammonium nitrate, by the way, for those of you who are interested in the history of nitrates, was not discovered as a fertilizer. It was developed, at least in part, as a high explosive. And what coal companies do on mountaintop removal jobs is they bring in drills, great big scaffolded drills, and they drill holes hundreds of feet into the ground sometimes. And they pack those drill holes with ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, ANFO, A-N-F-O, diesel, in other words. They put an electric charge to it, and they blow the mountain to kingdom come, or to perdition, as the case may be. Those are the explosives that were used up on Gauley Mountain, about 2 miles as the crow flies from me, maybe three, when they were blowing that mountain to perdition a couple of years ago, and I told you about it, and from time to time our windows would rattle and dishes would shake. It's what they're using now across the river at that Indian Coal Company's mines. And the blasts go off. Let's see. I noted one here. It's 4:32 p.m. Can't find it. But they become kind of ubiquitous in the day in and day out. And there will be more of it. And of course, when you blow the mountains apart, some of it goes into the air and then settles elsewhere, lands in streams, gets rained on, gets forced into the soils, eventually works its way down into water supplies, falls in rivers, falls on everything. Seeks its own level as it falls into the New River Gorge, the Gauley River Canyon. because we're surrounded by it here. And then one day your kid comes home and says, Dad, you're going to have to go to the store and, you know, buy me bottled water because we can't use the water at school because it's contaminated with diesel fuel and heavy metals. I'm not going to go into a litany of what heavy metals do to the human body. Many of you probably already know. But neurologic deficits are part of it. Hair falling out, burning up of the basic filtration devices inside the human body, namely the liver, the spleen, the kidneys. And that's where I was last night. And that's where I may find myself on a number of occasions moving forward. I know, for instance, that we will be attending the permit hearing. Those are the 12th and 13th of April. That's how much time's been scheduled. And hopefully we will be rallying some. If we do that, I will do everything in my power to make it possible for you to hear it and be there at a distance. Because what else do you do? And again, I say this with the consciousness that we here are not the only ones with a struggle of this sort. It doesn't always have to be coal. As you heard when Dar Jamal offered his brilliant commentary on the Gulf and the BP disaster, the people in the Gulf are being basically ignored to death. Oil spills and coal kills. It's the Gulf, it's Appalachia. They're trying to open up Alaska, saying that Alaska has more coal in it than all of the lower 48 combined. And they can't wait to get at it. Not, mind you, to fuel any net good for the United States, but rather to ruin that pristine wilderness and send it to China. Or, perhaps, India. Plans for a coal terminal on the Columbia River are underway. Heroic citizens are protesting against that and trying to stop it. If they don't succeed, the Columbia River will just become another wet nightmare waterscape. Not a single scrap of the coal that comes out of the ground being blown apart by that coal company from India here in my county will ever go to the benefit of anyone who lives here or anyone who lives in the United States. It will all go to India. You may from time to time have heard, because she has such a laser beam focus on these things, you may have heard Sandra talking on this program about the failures of capitalism and the death spiral of capitalism. Well, this is part of that. This is part of capitalism's attempt to consume everything in the name of profit. And instead of going boldly forward into the future, we find ourselves running bass-ackwards into the past, into the mercantilist past, where the cane was grown in the Caribbean and was then, the juices were then shipped to New England, where they were fermented and distilled into rum and then exported elsewhere. Similar mercantilist capitalist schemes have been run with other raw materials. Cotton from the Old South going to Europe to be turned into to fabric to be sent back and sold at a profit. Fibers and fabrics grown in the Indian subcontinent being sent to England to be turned into textiles and sent back. Somehow I think, I get the notion, that this was not what Gandhi had in mind when he dreamed of Indian independence. I say that because there's no independence in it. It's just a constantly shifting tableau of exploitation and misery and death. Isn't it? It certainly feels that way to me. So that's sort of a little on-the-ground report from my world. Yes, there are many other things to be talking about tonight. Excesses and horrors from the religion industry. The looming threat of that urge that the United States seems to have the hardest time resisting, the urge to bomb some brown people in the name of profit. Profit driven, curiously enough, by what? Oh, look, a hydrocarbon. Oil. There is an emerging theme here, isn't there? That we are trapped in some sort of feedback loop in which the only way to power our perceived desires on this planet is to destroy ourselves in the process. Whether it's atomic energy, nuclear energy, coal, oil, gas, the getting of it and transforming it into the energy to fuel our lives is founded, grounded, and entirely predicated upon sacrificing some nameless, faceless group for the good of company profits. It needn't be that way. That brave and beautiful future that many of us have hoped for actually is out there and is actually within reach. But the people with the money have got to be compelled to want it. And right now, they don't. The Saudi Arabians don't want us to look away from oil. Massey Energy, Alpha Natural Resources, Peabody, Arch, coal, don't want us to look away from coal to the generative powers of wind and sun. Can you imagine, if you will, a spaceship, a starship? And imagine that on that starship, there is a power plant that requires the people inside the starship to slowly take apart the starship and feed it into the power plant in order to maintain propulsion and life support. And all they can think about is how it will take less members of the Starship crew, never thinking for an instant about the in the middle of goddamn deep space. And that they're all going to wind up sucking vacuum. Space. At what point in time would the crew of that starship, the walls against the vacuum becoming thinner and thinner, at what point in time would they begin to contemplate mutiny? Well, that's us. Because this pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan called it, this little wet blue-green marble, this time machine hurtling through space, never occupying, not once in its entire existence, the same piece of space . That's what we're doing, isn't it? Pull down another mountain. Feed it into the machine. Cut open another hydraulic line and feed it, the liquid contents, into the machine. That's where we are. And the question is whether or not we, the crew, whether the crew be in Appalachia, I'm talking about. And it is a mutiny that I advocate. Because the captains of our ship, the captains who insist on continuing to feed the actual pieces of the ship itself into some vast incinerator, will lead us to our doom. And we must all be cognizant that no matter what portion of the ship we're on, whatever pieces of the ship are torn out and thrown into the incinerator have a direct bearing on us. You know, it's an old, relatively old, hell, human experience isn't old. The entirety of the human presence on this planet is not old. But nonetheless, it's old in terms of how individual lives look at them. Just a couple of 300 years ago, maybe four, John Donne said, "No man is an island unto himself." And it was a stunning revelation at the time that it was written. It is arguably about death, but I think it is very much about life. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. I was thinking last night as I was listening to the conversation at the meeting about that poem. Because John Donne speaks of clods and promontories being washed away by the sea. How much more damage done when it is no mere clod or promontory, but rather whole mountains. Entire mountain ranges, entire seas, entire valleys. And that's the question. My apologies for the intermittent nature of the connection. Everything's fine on the server end of things. This is me. This is us. This is, for some reason or another, us not getting the T1 that we pay so dearly for. For some reason, bandwidth is limited, and I need, I don't know, take a break or something and find out why. But I'd rather keep the conversation going as long as possible, or as much as possible, to the extent that we have connection. If you want to jump into the conversation, you're more than welcome to do it. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra. I guess I conjured you, huh?
Yeah. Well, you might want to, you know, mention the Yeats' Second Coming, too. That poem is always going through my head these days, too, I have to say.
That's true.
Man. Anyway, the transnational business, you know, and people need to, like, wake up and see their position in the whole global scheme now. I think the tension between globalization and nationalism is a real problem for us Americans, because I think people want to keep thinking of themselves as a part of whatever. But your story, and more we're seeing that, you know, we have this sort of global plutocracy and then the rest of us. But then you had the politicians trying to make appeals to nationalism to keep their job. So, I mean, it's all getting real interesting and really quite disturbing, especially for us, just the regular folks trying to get on, because the forces are ginormous. I don't know what to say, because that story you're talking about jumps over all boundaries, you know? It's just these sort of...
Well, it's a little bit of everything, isn't it?
It's these sort of horrific people who... are able to marshal the sort of power that only states had, you know, and people can't reconfigure that. They think of corporations as some appendage of a state, but, you know, they've sort of superseded.
And you know, you're left wondering what comes next.
Well,
and yet there's no creativity in that sphere, Sandra, because lo and behold, they're going backwards and not forwards. I mean, if I read it correctly.
We can join Milton's grandson seasteading. That shit.
Oh, my God.
I don't mean to bring that up, but I keep thinking about that because that is so disgusting. You know, his grandson proposing some more colonization for the rich, you know, the sea.
Yeah, that they can go and just live in. Right.
Without any, the laws. Anyway, I just saw him in that presentation. I just felt kind of ill. I'm like, God, these people, they breed and they just continue. Anyway. I really, you know, appreciate you, you know, tying it together like that. Because, I mean, you have to sort of, you know, provide some analysis for what's happening, you know, with the resource wars and that whole business. Because it's tied to everything. Because, trust me, if these cruise missile liberals aren't trying to gin up another war in the Middle East, I swear to God. I'm looking at this and thinking, you know, effing way.
Well, but I don't envy them the position that they're in, because you've got lunatics like Newt Gingrich running around saying, we need to declare war on Libya yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that, the sort of... reasonable voices are coming out of the Pentagon on this, like Gates reminding people that you do understand that a no-fly zone means an act of war. I was rolling. I said, oopsie, you know.
Yeah, just kind of had a little, I had one of those step-back minutes on him. It's like, wait a minute.
I think that he has to deal with the reality. Real politics says to him, good Jesus, we cannot engage in more military aggression in the Middle East, okay? That's where that's coming from. That's all about real power and our lack of it. So I just thought it was interesting.
Well, isn't it interesting that it sort of comes on the heels of him pointing out that Rumsfeld was an idiot?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess dude is about to leave the office, I hear. Old Gates, you know, things start bumping.
No, he's been there for a while.
Yeah, no, I hear he's about ready to step off. That was like another, bit of information out there so that you can fit that in with his sort of running candor. I'm like, dude. So.
Yeah, but you got to wonder what kind of bloodthirsty hawk will replace him.
Well, there is that. And it's just kind of like, you know, let's see. In my sort of horror world, Obama can appoint Hillary Clinton as defense, a war secretary, and then he can recruit Jebby for get rid of Biden and get Jebby in there.
you've been in a bad place.
Oh, you know, no, actually, I've been sort of studying control vocabularies and that kind of stuff, so I'm kind of a bit out of it, if you know what I mean.
Well, no, I do know exactly what you mean, but still. when you start getting into the language stuff, that can take you to all kinds of different places.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, if you're, you know, doing the library thing, you're learning about the aboutness of articles and artifacts and on and on and on. Anyway, you know, it's a bit esoteric.
No, wait a minute. You can't throw a word like a concept like aboutness out there. I mean, that sounds positively platonic.
Hey, it's Aristotle even. Anyway.
Oh well, okay. So I had the wrong cranky old Greek.
Well, you're right though. You're in the right direction with it. No, it's just a, you know, it's a concept for information retrieval that's, you know, kind of a high point. You got to really sort of understand, you know, what the hell you're documenting for retrieval, and if you don't make it a big picture-ish, then you can't group a number of like-minded documents together. It's real tricky, and, you know, it's interesting, especially when you drag in the sort of philosophy behind it. Anyway.
Oh, I got a feeling we could go for hours on that, Sandra.
Oh, yeah, the aboutness. You know, that when I discovered that word, I'm like, hello? Let me apply this to a lot of shit.
Well, you know, I have these little moments. Because we were driving down the road the other day, and I was informed by my teenagers in the back seat and you've used it just as a descriptor, that something is hella funny or hella scary. Well, hella has found the hollers of West Virginia. And I was told immediately that they were explaining. I said, wait, where'd you get that word? Because, you know, I've heard you use it, you know, for 2-3 years now. And it's explained to me that it's a really cool word and it really works well and it's really convenient and really helpful. And then I think it was my youngest said, and Mom and Dad, you are forbidden from using it because you'll just look like old geeks.
Well, also, I have to give you some more information about that. You know, for the youngins, the nieces, they say hecka because grandma will look at them crazy if they start cussing. So
yeah,
everything is hecka. So, you know, that's another addition for the...
Oh, for the preteen set.
For the under 13 set, yes. So my little niece came in, oh, that was hecka. I'm like, oh, dear God. So, yeah.
Can't keep up. Cannot keep up.
It's across the board, and it sort of changes nonstop. But that's funny. That's funny that your teens are, you know.
Well, and the fact that I was forbidden, the part that slammed me, I was forbidden to use it.
That's sort of just routine. So I guess if you want to mortify them, you could use it while shopping or something.
Oh no! No. Trust me, I'm evil and plotting, and I plan on using it in front of their friends.
Oh, see, that's not right. You are so wrong. Hey, listen,
see?
that whole thing with the water though, that's really disturbing me. I mean, how long? If they're telling the kids now, I mean, how long have they been subjected to this diesel water?
See, that's what I don't know.
Okay, because that's the thing that when you soon as I said it, I said, because usually when authorities admit to stuff, you know, it's like, oh, wow, you need to try to figure out, well, how long has this been going on? You see, that's always my first question.
And see, the funny thing is, this is Margie's third year at that high school. It is my son's first, and neither of them had any of the problems that they have had prior to arriving at that school. Now, I realize that's purely anecdotal and cannot be subjected to any sort of scientific rigor, but it's fact.
Yeah, no, but it's just, you know, obviously, you know, he needs to comply, but it's just so disturbing, just the sort of level of toxicity you guys deal with all over the show over there.
Well, and because we're talking about a school day that's 8 hours long, how much water do I provide them? You know, for drinking purposes.
Well,
and then, you know, because we're talking about diesel fuel and heavy metals, you can't wash your hands in that stuff either.
My question, too, I'm like, did they tell them that they cannot utilize the water in any fashion, I would think, right?
I'm not sure about. But, you know, after basketball practice, after football, baseball practice, you go to the showers, you know.
Ew.
Right. I mean, we know that from what happened down in southern West Virginia with the water problems down there. You had mamas who were dutiful and diligent, and they had their children brush their teeth, you know, after every meal, and then their teeth dissolved in their heads. And it was just because they were using the poisoned water.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the skin is an organ. It's the organ, so it's not like, you know.
And it is, I believe, what's the scientific term or biologic or what matter? It is semi-permeable.
Right. You know, so, I mean, yeah, okay, of course you're not going to ingest it, but I'm sorry, you can put it on your skin and it can be absorbed pretty readily, especially with all the trace minerals. I mean, that's horrible. I guess you need to do some more investigation.
Well, yeah, and we will be, but the question is, once you, And this is, you know, this is part and parcel of that whole babble that I was doing. Once you find out, what the hell do you do?
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, it's the same thing with the people chronically always telling you to get your breast exam, da-da-da-da-da. My question is, yeah, and when I get the lump and when they tell me what it is, then what?
Right, especially, you know, no health care. No
health care. I'm like, well, what, you know, thanks for the info, but, yeah. So I understand what you're saying. It's just sort of,
Do we just pack up and leave, Sandra? Because what? If that's the case and this area has been toxified, the land's not worth a damn. I can't go somewhere and buy something better.
Yeah, no, I think that, I was thinking about that for you when you were talking about just a week away and you felt physically well. You know, I thought, damn, that.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, my wife and I have had, Agnes and I have had long conversations about this. You can't bring it up to the medical professionals around here because, coal, you know, to the extent that, you know, I say coal is everywhere environmentally, its toxins are everywhere. Well, its tentacles are into everything around here as well.
Yeah, well, everything has to be suppressed that can offer relief. You know what I mean? That's how you contain. That's how you contain populations. Yeah, I don't know.
And so you just so all of a sudden when I saw that article from Jeff Biggers about Bulu Imam and Jharkhand province in India, I mean, it was like you know, the heavens opened, the light streamed down, the angelic choir was there, and it's like, Buster, it is time to reach out to all of these communities so that everybody's forming common cause. I don't know how to get, I don't know how to get 100 hillbillies to Mumbai, India, to protest outside SR Corporation's headquarters. But by God, we've got to have some kind of linkage.
Well, I mean, I just am so struck by, you know, how these entities are just in concert with our government, the government that we're supposed to have a say in, we don't, because they're marshaling their own power with these transnationals to fuck over the citizens.
Precisely. I mean, you just said what I couldn't quite get my head or mind or mouth around to find the words for. Where do you can't there. It's the spaceship analogy that I was making. You know, you can't go to the lifeboats.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing that is really disturbing to me. You know, when you look at it, you know, on a macro sort of level, like just.
I mean, I'll tell you the truth. If you know, after the trip and everything, and you know, the port side calls that we had were just hours long, 5 hours here, 8 hours mm-hmm. there. So you know, you don't really get any immersion.
Yeah.
But the first place we stopped was Grand Turk, and it's just this little bitty island, and it's the capital. It's the provincial or whatever capital of the Turks and Caicos. The population centers are elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You get off the ship, you go wandering around the island. You can rent a scooter and circumvallate the island in, you know, or whatever word, in less time than it takes to get you back on the boat. Hal Sparks did that, just tooling around on his little scooter through Cockburn Town and stuff.
Well, he really marches to his own little music.
Oh, he is a special, special man. I love him to pieces. But anyway, I was struck by the fact that, you know, there were just little ramshackle bed and breakfasts on Grand mm-hmm. Turk. There was no big Marriott, no Hilton, no high rises rising at no. Everything was kind of laid back in 19th century. Not a hell of a lot of new construction. Still mm-hmm. kind of getting over the hurricane from 8 years ago.
Right.
And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, my God, this all of a sudden looks pretty damn good. You know, if only, you know, could I get out of the Appalachia and wind up there, you know,
yeah,
and just, you know, I'll teach English and Latin, and Agnes can be a nurse, and the kids can go and harvest conch to make extra money.
Yeah, listen, the thing is, though, is that, I mean, I don't, you know, I think that you need to have conversations about possibly finding somewhere else to be. I mean, I know it might seem unimaginable, but listen, the toxicity, man. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, and no,
man,
those
the lack of,
those conversations are really honest to Jesus beginning to take place, Sandra. Agnes and I are talking that way, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know what it would look like. I don't know how it would work.
Sure.
And you know, frankly, the thing is, and I come back to my thesis. There's nowhere to hide.
Well, no, I mean, you know, yeah, obviously you have to introduce the level of realism to it, but I still think that I don't see any problem with you looking at all your different options, because you can't keep having announcements from your kids like that. Good Jesus.
It ran through me like a dose of salt.
You know, I'm just like, wow, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, right off the bat, I looked at Agnes and I said, pull them out, screw it. You know, because of those questions that you raised, you know, okay, so they can't drink it. How many other ways are they exposed to it? You know, they've got a cafeteria there. How are they using where they do school lunches? How do they feed them lunch without water?
Yeah, no. All of that is something that should be asked. I definitely would inquire. Well, okay, that's fine, but what about, you know, a cup of tea or coffee or boiling spaghetti? I mean, how's that all working out?
Right, because they're listing it as a boil water advisory. I neglected to mention that. It's being described as a boil water advisory. You know what? You can't boil the goddamn diesel fuel out of the water.
No, and the you always
or the selenium, the arsenic, the cadmium, the barium, the mercury, the manganese, and no.
You have to always be mindful of the regulatory capture, too. I mean, can you trust? You can't trust it anymore, you know?
No.
I don't know. I definitely would be, yeah.
You know, our buddy Joe Ray just wrote in a few minutes ago, and he said, don't forget coal and oil's mutant brother corn. And that's true. I heard some statistic. One-third of all the corn grown in the United States now is grown to make ethanol.
Yeah, no, that, you know, the whole idea of growing food to put in a car is just sick anyway on when you think of it in terms of that.
Well, and like, beyond the moral repugnance, it's stupid.
And the amount of energy involved with the whole process seems
right.
to be counterintuitive, too, from what I know, which is a little, mind you, but it just sounds really subsidy political / lobby driven. At the end of the day, it's like clean coal, you know. And
no, oh, that phrase. Mm.
I know, but you know, listen. I don't think I sent you this article because it's from the Financial times, and, you know, it's just so much funny business with their registration. But William Daley pinned why Obama is a pro-business president, you know, in the Financial Times, because the man is still being criticized for not being pro-business enough.
That just...
And it's just mind-boggling. It's like, what?
We can't even get him to put those comfortable shoes on and go out and march with folks in Wisconsin, and he's still not pro-business enough?
No, and the thing is, I mean, you know the whole argument for me, because I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute, fool. That's right. You can't come out and condemn these hearings because half the public thinks you're a Muslim. So you're strapped there.
Jesus.
You see what I'm saying? It's just like...
No, damned if he doesn't, damned if he doesn't.
Right. And so I'm acknowledging that, but on the other hand, though, are we really going to have to live with some freak who wrote about a congressman saving the day from the scary Muslim, reliving his fantasy in Congress on Thursday with these McCarthyite hearings against... designated religious minority? Am I living in America? Is that what's going on?
It sort of calls the question on, am I living in America? Because
is this country just one, you talk about feedback loops. Well, a feedback loop of just hatred and vilifying groups seems to be the feedback in this country. It just goes on and on. I'm thinking, where's the outrage? Where's the White House? Where are other institutions that are here in this country against this madness? Because why is this man having these hearings? I'm so disturbed by this, actually.
Well, no, as am I, and I can't find any genesis.
What's the reason?
It's more red meat for the teabaggers.
No, but it goes beyond that when there's not enough people speaking out against this to the point where it should be shut down. This should not occur. This is the thing that's really bothering me. It's like, oh, you're going to go ahead and let this go on?
I mean, there is some speaking out going on, I think, as of last count.
Yeah.
Something like 18 or maybe 28 members of the House had signed off and said that this is disgusting. This ought not be happening. But... So what? Yeah, 28 House members. John Dingell, Pete Stark. You know, you can count on Pete Stark to get stuff right most of the time. But I mean, there should be...
Where is the White House? I'm serious. What is the problem with the president coming out and saying, this is not what we do in America, we do not...
Didn't you just answer that, Sandra? Because half the country thinks he's a Muslim anyway,
right.
And he's got 2012 to think about, by God.
No, I know, but what I'm saying, though, but wouldn't this be a time for presidential leadership? Am I missing something?
No, you're on it. You're right on top of it, but that's something we don't get.
Well, anyway,
By the same token, I'll ask this much: if there has ever been a time, you know, the only way you eradicate, and I think history will bear me out on this, the only way you eradicate fascism is to quote Bob Marley, kill it before it grows. And there should be, 100,000 people, at a minimum, surrounding the Capitol the instant that Peter King gavels his hearing.
No. I mean, if there's any time when mass protest is warranted, you know, this would be it. And the other thing that's really doing me in is that I really do think that they're going to do a government shutdown. That's another thing that I'm thinking about. I'm like, oh.
That's where this is headed.
Crap. Because, you know, Reed and whoever... Mitch Face had come up with some arrangement. Now that's falling apart because here we are with these so-called leaders squabbling over not that they're not going to cut, but how much. And Obama jumping in, talking about we can cut even more if you like. They're doing the best imitation of Amos and Andy I've ever seen in my fucking life, you know? And I'm sorry to go there.
No, that's okay. You can do it. I can't.
Shuffling.
No.
Shuffling.
well,
shuffling.
Jesus.
And I'm just like, dude, you know what? This is all in lieu of our grand
plan. but that's what the government shutdown is about. Now that you've opened the door for me, I'll take the next step. And that is about these white folks showing the dark man in the White House who's really in charge.
Well, there's always that element here because we have a person of color. And it's just kind of like, damn, where's Dave Chappelle? You understand what I'm saying? See, that's the number I need to see. Fuck all the dumb shit. He could scare the hell out of them honkies if he came out crazy. Just one for 1 minute.
Yeah.
one minute. One minute. Right. What? Yes. You know, I mean, I would.
I'm Barack Obama.
I would sell everything to see something like that. But it's not going to happen with him. We know it's not. But he gonna be in a world of hurt, though, if the government is shut down. I'm like, I don't know what Republicans think they're doing. It's not going to help their cause either.
Oh, but it will. It will.
Wow.
It'll help among the teabaggers.
Well, I understand that, but see, with government, though, people don't like to think about it, but they're going to be thinking about it, because if it stops, people don't realize how it's in every aspect of our lives.
But by the same token, Sandra, people, because of the nature of this discussion, debate, whatever, people will say, well, you know, they shut it down. This is just because the human nature, I'm convinced, is to do as much. The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. You know, the whole thing from Annie. Human beings want to do that. We badly want to do that. And as a consequence, if the Republicans shut down the government, they're counting on America saying, well, you know, it'll be shut down for 5 days. It'll be shut down for 10 days. Wait a minute. It's a month. And they know that they've got a window in which to work, and they also know, please don't forget this, they also know that Barack Obama caves, okay?
Yeah, he's not Clinton. This ain't Clinton and Newt Gingrich. That's the thing that's also so worrying. You see what I'm saying?
Right, I think McConnell and Boehner are counting on Barack Obama to cave in the first 2 or 3 days. Fold like a house of cards.
Hoover.
Yeah.
Is what's going on. But see, these people are so stupid, they are going to wreck the economy and whatever little recovery is going on badly. And
but again, the Republicans don't care.
Yeah.
Because in 2012, assuming that they actually do want to win the White House, which I still don't believe, then they say, look, the Negro wrecked the economy again.
No, but I mean, and the thing is, he's just sort of riding his own, demise. To me, Obama, I don't really know if he knows what the hell he's doing, because, you know, he definitely is throwing the liberals under the bus, at least the civil liberty ones. I mean, the Gitmo thing is another thing that's like, you weren't going to close it. Now it's open for business. Open for business. Gitmo. I mean, it's a joke at this point.
And yet, at the same time, I mean, I have some sympathies for the damned if I do, damned if I don't hole that he finds himself.
Me too.
You know, you started out talking about Libya. You know, God Almighty, he's already getting hell for not having, you know, stormed the beaches at Tripoli.
Well, no, but see, he's making noises that I don't want to hear, though, Bob. This is the thing. And we are talking about Obama.
Well, look, you know, we don't have as many.
No, but the one good thing that I'll leave a little bright spot, though, because Obama was talking about Mubarak needs to stay until all them people popped up. So we know he can be moved.
That's true. That's true. But the thing is, though, with Libya, I think the Republican Party counts on him caving and eventually doing their bidding. And they're not doing this, Sandra, without evidence to back up their positions, because he has caved in the past.
No, but the whole Libya thing is really disturbing, because, you know, I'm worried about that pissant over in England because of that SAA debacle. Did you hear about that madness?
No.
Okay, well, they did some sort of fake rescue and it all went to hell. the FAA.
Oh.
And anyway, it was a bad move. So look for Cameron to be pushing NATO. I mean, all of it is just sort of coming. It's not going well. And, you know, I'm bracing myself for NATO to try to act like NATO.
And meanwhile, you've got the right wing in this country. And here's how the reasoning goes. Well, look. We don't have all those soldiers in Iraq anymore. We don't have that many in Afghanistan. They're just sitting around. Why not use them on Libya?
Yeah, no. But I'm still hoping that, you know, the specter of a third theater for the U.S. and the Middle East is just too much. But Susan Rice, that bitch scares me. Hillary, scary. I'm sure there's some other bitches.
Well, you're the one that coined the phrase, at least on this program, cruise missile liberal.
I don't know where I got that from, but that was one. That
no, well, wherever it came from, you know, send them royalties because it works.
You know, I just thought that was like fantastic.
I happened to catch in one of those embarrassing moments when I was watching Morning Joe. A couple of liberal or Democratic, God knows not liberal, but a couple of Democratic senators. And they were talking, they were there to talk about one thing, and they shifted the conversation to Afghanistan. And one of them said, you know, and the shame of it all is that we behave this way because we're afraid of being perceived as weak. And that's what it's all about. This is, you know, this is reactive politics, Sandra. This is the politics of fear. This is the politics that happens when you're more concerned about what the other side's going to say about you. This is the firing of Shirley Sherrod because you're afraid of what Glenn Beck will say about you. Did you see this firestorm about the former executive from NPR?
Oh, no. What's that about? No,
Well, Andrew Breitbart's little two-legged turd. What's his name? That did
James O'Keefe first?
Yeah, James O'Keefe put on another one of his dummied-up videos in which he sits down with a guy who is a former executive from NPR.
Okay.
And tries to get him to take a $5 million no-strings-attached check from a shadowy Muslim group.
Oh, you mean for the NPR?
Yeah.
For their fundraising?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. How'd that work out?
And he makes jokes about, well, we know we've got friends here at National Palestinian Radio, and the former executive goes, ha 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 ha. You know, it's all on video. It's all bullshit. It's completely dummied up, but it's out there and making big waves today.
Oh, well, listen. Think about this whole sort of confluence here of King and his hearings. You know, Obama running scared as usual, and it's really scary because he might decide, shit, let me go bomb something, shut these folks up.
Well, let me go kill some Muslims to let them see that I can do it.
That's what I'm
all
saying.
Because I had to kill Muslims because George Bush started them other two wars, but let me go kill me some Muslims all by myself, and maybe they'll quit thinking I are one.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm really being facetious. I really hope that it's not going to be reduced to something like that, but I am worried about the no-fly zone attack, because that's what it is, an attack. It's just too much because it's another distraction, you know, I think. I don't trust any of it, you know?
How can you?
Anyway, listen, I'll, wait a minute. You can tell me, what's happening with the NFL? I mean, have they made it a level playing field, or what's going on?
I'm not ready to say anything. I don't trust the owners. Let's just put it that way.
But did they get? I don't even see. They had a deadline. Did they get an extension, or is it? I mean, what happened?
I don't know that part. Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, because I haven't really been. You know, I stopped paying attention because I was like I said. Aboutness.
Well,
anyway.
Aboutness. Well, you know, and it's draft time coming up, and right.
Yeah.
I mean, most of what I saw in the last 24 hours has all been about the fact that the Holy Trinity down at Miami and the NBA is about to go completely sideways.
Oh yeah, so you have the NBA and football, which may be. A no-show for next year, right?
Right.
And we have, you know, the Republicans destroying the economy, no football, no basketball, a new war in the Middle East.
You know, I'd be careful about letting them bread and circuses go away in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, no, that's not really a good idea. And listen, one more thing. So I have to mention this. So the Walker, that fool listens to some people in the sky telling him to destroy working people. Is that the latest?
Yes, yes. Well, he's been a hardcore fundamentalist. We knew that all along.
No, but, you know, when it's just unbelievable. This man, listen. They need to get rid of him. God, he's a horror show. I hear that Republicans starting to cave because the pressure is getting kind of hard for them people. Not for him. If he's some sort of zealot, nothing will change. But I hear that some of the Republicans are starting to waver.
Well,
I don't know.
They've got to have some misgivings at this point, don't they?
Well, and then I heard someone talk. I don't know if it was that one Nichols talking about how they're expecting tractors this weekend, the farmers. You know, when the farmers show up, you're like, damn, can I go? You know the shit's going to get on.
Yeah, it's,
when the farmers come out.
But no, Walker, yeah, Scott Walker is a hardcore weird-ass fundamentalist, and you know, yeah, he believes God talks to, it's not so much that he talks to God, it's that he hears God talking to him. Oh, yeah,
I think he's getting it confused with the Koch brothers. That's who's talking to his dumbass.
Well, you know what? But when you're as rich as the Koch brothers, when they talk to you, they can sound a hell of a lot like God now, can't they, Sandra?
That's what I mean. And also, but like I said, if they're having this sort of $150,000 mass protest on the weekend, I think the Democrats would have to hang tough to let that happen, because that could be huge if that's the sort of numbers they're expecting, you know?
Without a doubt. And I had a phone call from my buddy Bruce that I got to meet on the cruise, and he's up in Wisconsin, and was just telling me, he said, you know, the energy level is not flagging. It's growing.
Yeah.
And and these petitions for recall that are out there, they vary because the Wisconsin law, and I didn't know this at the time. It was a nice little bit of education for me. You have to have been in office for a year before you can be recalled. And
well,
the executive, same thing. You got to have been in office for a year.
Oh, even for the assembly, too? I thought it was different for the houses there.
Well, maybe different for the House, but for the Senate, you've still, and they've identified the Republicans with a year's tenure, and they are going after them. I mean,
okay.
With teeth bared, and there's a lot of Republicans that are beginning to, hey, wait, because, you know, you don't just look at it, and when the mood is like this, this is the only thing, Sandra, that Citizens United money cannot buy away.
Yeah, no, and, you know.
And
yeah.
So there's Republican senators who are beginning to shit kittens with crocheted tails.
No, okay, so you're saying that the senators who've been there for more than a year, it's open season on their asses, right?
Yeah. And they've identified enough of them that if they get rid of them, it's all over.
And also, other news that I heard about that Ohio business they've decided to schedule hearings. Them motherfuckers running scared, too.
Yep.
Instead of letting it be enacted, it's like, hold up, we need to run some hearings. Now, the reason why they're running hearings is obviously they're getting a lot of pushback. And I heard that upward of 20,000 people are showing up for these hearings in Ohio. So,
And you can gauge the desperation in Ohio because they're still playing the dirty games.
Yeah.
You know, they got rid of that State Senator Bill Sites off the Labor Committee in the Senate because he wouldn't vote on the anti-union bill, wouldn't vote in favor. Well, that bill was replaced. That bill was passed in the Senate, and it was sent to the House, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've done the same damn thing in the House now.
Oh, what, they removed the person who wanted to call the hearing?
No, they replaced a Republican on the House Labor Committee in order to gin up a specific result on that vote because they were missing a vote there. So goodbye committee membership.
Okay, but I also heard some labor professor in Ohio said that they are going to start. They have 90 days to get X number of signatures to put it on a referendum. So the Ohio law, none of these laws are slam dunk when you look at the constitutions of each state. So it's interesting, in Ohio, they will immediately start the signature gathering to try to repeal it from a referendum point of view, which bodes well if you can gin up the public like they're doing. You see what I mean?
And that's why I said what I did about Citizens United. When people are this pissed off, you can run ads till hell freezes over. Ain't nobody buying because it's it's too close in time. There's too much immediacy. There's too much relevancy. And there's too much primacy.
Oh, I know. And listen, I know I need to go, but I really have to mention this, too, because I was also equally disturbed. Did you see that report on 60 Minutes with those kids?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Listen. Oh, my God. And they're cutting so many programs to help just that situation. I mean, those kids. It made me sick.
Yeah. No, they're hanging everybody out to dry.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Everybody whose last name isn't K-O-C-H, basically, at this point.
It's incredible. Like I said, you know, I do think people are sort of pissed off, and, you know, the Republicans are overreaching and letting people connect the dots. Ain't enough Citizen United in the world to stop the numbers, though, if they get going. Sorry.
Well, I hope we're right.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, you know, we have to look at it that way, but don't forget the specter of the Taft Hartley. Though people don't realize that shit is still in force.
Yes, it is.
And if we want to have widespread wildcat strikes or sympathy strikes, don't you know that they could shut that
Taft Hartley? Yeah, Taft Hartley will be used like the cudgel that it is.
And I think, you know, people don't be thinking about that, but I just thought I'd throw it out there because that's a hell of a bill. That
it's
anyway,
it's a big hammer. All right.
All right.
Yeah, Sandra, back to your aboutness. We'll talk soon.
I will.
All right. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Andy?
Yeah, Sandy.
What's happening?
Hey, you know, I kind of disagree with you about the Libyan situation. I mean, there's a lot of people dying there. Just for the right to not live in tyranny.
That's absolutely the truth.
You don't think they deserve a little help? Like when you have 50 tanks come down on a city and start blowing things up left and right, that people, running around in bare feet and 18 and 20-year-olds trying to take on these tanks don't need a little help?
They...
And
the gut reaction is to say, hell yes, they do.
On them with bombs?
Yeah, but how do we do that?
Can we stop that?
But how do we do that without starting a full scale war?
Clinton did it in
Kosovo,
Serbia, and Bosnia. He just used air power. That was it. No ground troops.
Yeah, but there was a lot of nastiness out of that would have gotten anybody but Clinton prosecuted as a war criminal. You know, remember we bombed things beyond command and control. We bombed
the Chinese embassy for one.
Well, we bombed civilian infrastructure, the power grid, the clean water supply, and not just in Kosovo, but up into Serbia as well. And
yeah, they do a lot of bombing. I thought if they could just leave it to keep the planes off the ground.
Well, you know, maybe that's possible. But there's no clear consensus that I'm aware of, and I've read a good bit about it, but there's no clear consensus on the ground of people saying we want the United States in, or NATO, or anybody else.
I think there is a pretty good consensus that they want a no-fly zone. I wish if you listen to the BBC, that's what you're hearing. The committee that's in Benghazi that they put together does want NATO support. They would like air cover. And what about humanitarian aid? I mean, just getting food supplies in.
Yeah. No,
some cover because the ships are being turned around by the fighter planes.
It's thorny, but by the same token, is there any way that we do this that we don't get blamed? Because the thing is, we're going to go in, Andy, and we're going to bomb some mud huts, and we're going to kill some women and children. And then the single greatest obscenity in the English language is going to rear its head. We're sorry about the collateral damage. You know, we've got the nine freshly dead bodies in the ground in Afghanistan, little boys who were out gathering wood, who were gunned down by a helicopter gunship. You know, one little, two little, three little Afghans, four little, five little, six little Afghans. And we picked them off one by one.
You know, Bob, you bring up the straw dog falseness. Come on. People, kids are dying there. Women and children are starving. There comes a time when you got to stand up and stop being a friggin' peacenik. And you got to stand up for people. It's like you've said when it comes to that book about the South. Now I'm forgetting what it is. But there comes a time when you got to take a stand on a side or not. And you can let people die who just want to get rid of tyranny and get rid of a dictator that's been there 41 years, or you can put up these straw dogs. The objective is to keep the Air Force from not getting in the air. All right. The objective is to stop the planes from taking off. You stop the mission creep. We're not saying bringing helicopters in and going and actually fighting battles for them and fighting wars. We're just saying keep the Air Force from flying. Period. I mean, you try to keep the mission to a narrow focus.
But isn't step one in that process, Andy, taking out their anti-aircraft?
That's what Gates said, yeah.
If you look back at how we've done this in the past, be it Kosovo or Baghdad or anywhere else, the first thing we do is we go in and we take out their ability to resist our air power. Well, anti-aircraft batteries don't just sit by themselves in the desert. Evil bastards like Muammar Gaddafi usually they like to put them in neighborhoods.
And that's true.
And so this is not going to. I'm extremely distrustful of anybody in the military who uses phrases like surgical strike, as if we're only going to do this one little dot and we know where every airplane is. No. I mean, look, going back to when Reagan decided to bomb Libya. Well, he sure showed Gaddafi he killed his 3-year-old daughter.
Yes, but you got a civil war going on now, and people that are just trying to get themselves out of tyranny. And people are whether we help or not, a lot of people are probably going to die.
They already have.
Are giving their lives.
They already have.
And there's probably been thousands killed already. And they're fighting against tanks, and they're fighting against fighter planes, which they don't have.
You know, there's talk of cratering the runways. Yeah, that would be effective. You know, maybe there's a way to do this and do it relatively bloodlessly. I'm unaware of it, Andy. And I am, and secondarily, because we're talking about the American military here, I have absolutely no confidence in the American military's ability to do it semi-bloodlessly.
Right.
Without killing some innocents. You know, I mean.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt there'd probably be, like you said, I agree with you that when you have an anti-aircraft gun, you usually put them in places where you know it'll cause a lot of controversy. And probably caused some civilian deaths. No question there.
And the question we then have to answer is, and moreover, the people on the ground in Libya have to answer, is, you know, are they willing to sacrifice their own people for that? I'd want the answer to that before any recommendations were made. And frankly, if the world community comes together on this, we could as easily starve Gaddafi out as anything else. I mean, we can airlift stuff in. We can drop food supplies. God damn, you know, we dropped them all over Afghanistan. Remember the little food packets that were the same color as the little bombs?
Well, what we'd have to do is starve him out from ammunition and starve him out from military supplies. That would probably be the best thing that could happen. I'm not so sure when you do these blockades, unfortunately, you also hurt the citizenry real bad, too.
Yeah. And again, you very easily run afoul of the law of so-called civilized conflict when you do that. You know, sieges are always hardest on the innocents, the innocents who happen to reside in the besieged area.
Right.
Well, so, right now, you know, I'm just, I always tend to look at warfare as the last possible option, and it should never be considered an option.
But there is warfare. It's warfare now, there. Whether we get in it or not, a lot of people are going to die. A lot more people could die if this lasts longer. Maybe less people would die if Gaddafi leaves faster. I mean, that's part of the mathematics. Maybe if we helped, maybe Gaddafi would be overthrown quicker than let the pain linger longer, like maybe a few years. Because I don't think that the people in the eastern part of Libya, the Benghazi and the Lanruf and these other towns that are now totally in rebel control are going to give up real easy.
No, and, you know, I read an article Matt Osborne sent it along to me about the nature of the rebel forces. You know, again, yeah, you're right. These are not military, and they have very little military leadership, and they have very little in the way of non-coms to keep them in line. They do things like sitting on anti-aircraft guns and just shooting rounds into the air in celebration when they don't have that many rounds in the first place. It's definitely a messy situation. But I, you know, maybe I just have a shockingly low opinion of our military leadership. But I, at this point, looking at Afghanistan and looking at Iraq, our military, as far as I'm concerned, from David Petraeus on down, could screw up a one-car funeral and have proven themselves willing to do that.
I can't disagree with you there. I guess I just spend a lot of time on the BBC, and I think the British seem to be pushing this, and other European nations, and then even the U.S. is. I mean, they're coming down pretty hard because there are a lot of European interests in Libya, German interests, for instance.
German interests, Italian interests.
Italian interests, of course, because they get a lot of their oil, or shit, you know, a lot of Libyan oil goes to Europe, which of course would be a concern for them,
right? And so there you
pretty hard to try to get some resolution.
And so, but there you are again, Andy. Are we going in because it's a humanitarian crisis, or are we going in because it's a corporate crisis for the oil companies? And again, I would want really, really clear evidence that our motives were pure. Because I've seen us, you know, we've got to take him out because he killed my daddy. And lo and behold, it was about the damned oil. That evil toxic goo is a curse upon mankind. And if anything, I guess you could make an argument that we haven't gone in there because we're trying to keep the oil platforms from getting blasted. You know what's
now? Again, there are a lot of citizens of Libya who are standing up strong and doing like an Egyptian and fighting for their lives and dying just to get Gaddafi out of there and get some freedom. There are people doing that. They look like they're pretty pure and just wanting to get rid of a dictator. And that dictator has been pretty horrible.
Oh, he's been awful. And remember, this is because I am a cynic by nature. I would say that to be careful in listening to the BBC coverage, not as necessarily as an indictment of the BBC, but as an indictment on possible ulterior motives in the British government. Because remember, Gaddafi made a fool of the British government in what, the last 3 years, with all that business about letting the Lockerbie
guy go.
He was supposed to be dead within 6 months of setting foot on Libyan soil, and he's living comfortably, thank you very much. Well, you know, that doesn't play well with the guys who wear bowler hats and morning coats. And so it might... I'm a cynic, I guess. I have a real hard time seeing war as a solution.
Well, there's no doubt, too. I mean, there's a lot of atrocities happening there, and Gaddafi is dragging people out who just want to peacefully protest, and people are disappearing left and right, which happens in that kind of a dictatorship. And, you know, they're ending up in prisons and ending up tortured, and this is, you know, the usual thing when there's no
Yeah, which makes it seem like there's still a lot of people on Gaddafi's side, because he can't do this by himself.
Right. That's why it's turning into a civil war.
Yeah. And civil wars are the nastiest of all wars. Always have been, always will be. And if we could say, yeah, the American motives will be pure as the driven snow. No, we're not going to kill any mothers in mud huts with so-called smart bombs that couldn't find their own ass with their hands in the dark. Yeah, sure, go. Do it. Take out his airstrips. Take out his aircraft. Don't let a helicopter into the air. Absolutely. But we can't do that. We can't do that, Andy. We're no good at that. We're from the military school of kill them all and let God sort them out. And once the bombs erroneously start dropping on some so-called rebels, well, there goes our credibility, because you know what? They're not going to look
Bob,
up and...
You're forgetting again the point I said before. A lot of people are going to die, maybe more so, if we don't do that.
Well, I mean, that was...
It's not like this because you close your eyes and say the American military is weak and walk away and watch it. People are dying. And a lot of people are going to die. And maybe we could have saved some of those people. I mean, look at it that way, too. Maybe some of those people wouldn't have had to die if we had kept his aircraft on the ground. A lot of people are going to die. Anyway.
Andy, we've been down this road because I, as a liberal, was screaming for all I was worth when George Bush was making that argument. We've got to take Saddam out because he's a brutal dictator who kills his own people. Because I remember, and I remember being opposed to that.
What about taking George Bush out?
What do you mean?
What about the liberals rising up in this country and somebody getting some kahunas and let's start fighting these fascists that have been ruling our country forever for the past 30 years? What about that going on here?
From my position, it depends on how you define fighting.
What about the revolution here? And the left-wing media won't talk about revolution. Let's have an Egypt here, because maybe that's the only way something
Well, isn't
can
that
change.
Isn't that what's happening?
We're not living in tyranny.
Isn't that what's happening in Wisconsin? Isn't that in Egypt?
Maybe somewhat. But I get tired of listening to liberal media, not you in particular, but the liberal media, the usual garbage people that, you know, Tom Hartman's and the Randy Rhodes are just driving me nuts of the apologists for this fool in the White House. And he is a fool. A complete fool, a complete poser, a complete fraud. And that's all I hear all day long. And I'm getting tired of it, too.
Well, I mean, I don't listen to it, so I don't know what's being said. I only know what my opinion is.
Everything is to stick up for Obama and to just make sure he gets elected. I don't even want another 4 years of this fool. It's worthless to me having him in there. He's a joke. A complete joke. Just like all the other leadership we have that doesn't do anything for working class people. That all they care about is the corporate CEOs and the rich, and that is it.
Well, that ain't me.
Right.
Without a doubt, that's not me. But I'm also not a person who I have to be committed by virtue of the very nature of some of the stuff I'm involved in here. I have to be committed to principles of nonviolence. I will not espouse violence. Now, I will gladly defend my home. I'm not going to sing Kumbaya with somebody coming through the door. They're going to get 12-gauge welcome wagon. But I will not espouse, Andy, this is too important because I can't be any other way. I will not espouse the use of violence, because the use of violence has never proven effective. It has never proven effective for anybody who wanted actual freedom, who wanted real reform. The use of violence only perpetuates more violence.
What was our Revolutionary War about in 1776? I think there was a little violence there.
Yes, there was violence, and that was in an era before when violence was the only answer. The concepts of nonviolence are fairly new to humanity, and people have been mentioning, for instance, out of. Yes, 1,000 people died in the Egypt uprising. that was from the side that believed in violence. Okay? If Egypt succeeds, Egypt will succeed because of its nonviolent attitude. Now, in Libya, Gaddafi responded with violence, and the people rebelled and decided to use violence in their own right. Now they have a civil war growing.
Again, it goes back to Kill a Mockingbird, which you brought up before. Sometimes you just got to stand up.
Yeah, you do, but you can stand up without bullets. I cannot and will not espouse the violence because it does not. Women, children do not benefit by it. Men don't benefit by it. The elderly don't benefit by it. Because people, I've got too many examples right in front of my eyes.
Look at the Civil War. Here's another example. The Civil War. How long is slavery supposed to go on? How long is the South supposed to drag us down? Which they're doing again. And you know they're doing it again. They're destroying us. They're reactionary. They're bringing us back to the 1890s, and that's the way they want it. How long do we continue? I would love anything to fight the South again. I really would, because you probably know I've mentioned before, my forefathers did that before. Maybe we got to do that again, because the South is killing us. It is killing working people in this country. Mississippi, Georgia, garbage states, man. It is garbage. They're just dragging us down. Alabama. When are people there, working people there, going to get a clue and start standing up for themselves?
Well, they've got plenty of clues. I know lots of Alabamians who do. But the clue is not the problem. The clue is the structure.
Like Florida, too, which is, God, it's like the third world. The states are run, and they elect these third world people. It is amazing. These are amazing places.
Yeah, and it's part of my argument about the fact that we've entered a new phase in our culture. This country is too big. If anything, the only thing this country will do is balkanize. This country is on the road of empire, and it's going to go where empires go, and it's sort of an inertial force that's really, really hard to get around, because empires wind up on the dust heap of history. And that's where we're going. It's a choice. It's a choice that we made that was made by powerful, moneyed, benighted fools. And those are always the ones who make that choice. And now we are on. And now we're on the road. And there are no off ramps. This is where it goes. Now the rest of the world is a different story. But I understand your frustration, Andy, completely. Because the urge to say to hell with them, let's start dropping the bombs, is a profound one. Because, bombs are big and they go boom and they look like they work. But in the long run, they don't. Because when you wind up a civil war and you've got one armed camp left, then that means you're going to have some sort of dictatorial strongman who's not going to be hell of a lot better than the guy you replaced. And since you brought up the American Revolution, you can make that argument about the outfall of the American Revolution itself. Because lo and behold, we got done getting free of Britain, and what did we do? We set up a system that protected the moneyed class above all else. And it's that way to this day.
Well, at least the fallout from that was, at least at that time, still there was a lot more general wealth distribution and equality than there is today,
but it's all only
around the 1890s and 1880s when the Gilded Age, when really the disparity became so great, and of course it's great again.
But the disparity had also
about 100 years after the Revolutionary War before really the disparity in the United States became.
But see that you can see the early markings of it though, Andy, because there's a letter, for instance, from I forget who he's writing to, but Gouverneur Morris of New York.
Right, and he was a real son of a bee.
Yeah.
I mean, no doubt, he was a real right winger in his day.
And he wrote a letter saying, you see all those poor people that are out there in the streets, the ones that don't have money, the ones that don't have property? Well, they're figuring out they've got a little bit of power, and if we let them use it, we're screwed.
Right.
And that's 1774, 1784, something like that.
Well, Governor Morris hated Thomas Paine. Him and Thomas Paine were arch enemies.
Oh, Governor Morris was a piece of crap.
Right.
Governor Morris was
the guy who made sure that when Thomas Paine was in prison in France, that he didn't get out. He made sure Paine stayed in France. Because as long as Paine was away, Morris and his guys could do whatever they wanted. Because they feared Paine. Because Paine could rile the working class. And Morris and his guys were not the working class. Like you just said, they were the elitists of the day.
And so actually it turns out that this country has had that habit from its very inception. The Trail of Tears was put about by Andrew Jackson to make what was then called the West, which was, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Western Kentucky, Missouri, to make that safe for white people to come in and clean up on the property. And property was never primarily in the hands of the settlers. The companies and the land companies and so forth of the time always got in ahead of that game.
Right.
Do yourself a favor sometime and read, it's something I mentioned early in the program, read about the big land swindle in Appalachia. It'll make you sick. That's why my entire state is owned by entities whose last names end in land company.
Right.
I'm not necessarily sure that we have any sort of history to fall back on. Didn't we go into Korea with really, really pure motives? And MacArthur damn near started World War III before World War II was completely off. We have a habit of...
It's always been that domino theory with the same thing in Vietnam. It's always been that domino theory.
But, I mean, our good intentions...
We got to stop the communists wherever they are because they'll just keep taking over everything. It'll be South America next. They'll be at our borders.
But beyond that, there was also a humanitarian crisis underway in South Korea. And it was that we were concerned about as well.
We helped that out with No Gun Ree too. That was nice.
The origins of Vietnam were founded in our best intentions, whether it had to do with communism or humanitarianism. And it's one of those the road to hell is paved with good intentions kind of things. And I'm really, really leery of what Sandra calls cruise missile liberalism.
Well, as soon as you get the Richard Holbrooks in there and the CIA, things are not going to go.
And the thing is, you're never going to have one of these scenarios, Andy, where the Richard Holbrooks aren't involved.
Right. Because they will do anything dastardly to win.
And they also have corporate America and the transnationals whispering in their ear, telling them that, you know, you'll have a seat on this board and that board.
Absolutely.
And look at,
that's,
you know.
What Richard, you got that exactly. Richard Holbrooke was. He was an investment banker in New York. I think he was even on AIG's board.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Have a gun.
You know, I remember when Bill Clinton.
On a multinational board. You're right. He was rewarded.
Bill Clinton went into some Zikstan over there in Central Asia.
I think it was Kazakhstan.
And you know, there were horrible human rights abuses going on.
Right, and he did a nice little oil deal there.
Or maybe it was some noxious mineral. Maybe it was uranium. I remember one of those,
right.
Too.
Right.
You know, while people are sitting there begging for all of that peacemaker cachet and a little, you know, just a, you know, and we're not talking about people wanting to get rich. We're talking about people wanting to get left alone.
Right, I think the guy he was negotiating with had a habit of boiling people in oil.
Yeah, I think that was the guy.
Typical.
But do you see my concerns? Do you see why I can't just say, you know, let's go over there and create a no fly zone? Because we're
going to die if we don't.
And they're going to die if we do.
Maybe less people die if we do something.
So maybe there is a gun-free way to do this.
I don't think there is now. It's full-blown civil war, it looks like. I think it's already gone.
You know, I don't know. Could we go in and could we go in on the ground and establish a DMZ?
I'd be against us doing anything with troops. I mean, I would draw the line there. I would just say you do what you have to do by air, and if you had to give them weapons or something to work, or food, humanitarian food supplies, do that. But man, I would not want to put ground troops there. I mean, I would be really hesitant there.
You know why? We have this between the British and the U.S. and the French and the Germans. Everybody has a really well-funded, highly trained force of assassins. Why not go kill Gaddafi? Well, I mean, it's illegal, for starters, but that hasn't slowed us down much lately.
Or in the past.
Why not cut the head off the snake instead of trying to bomb the whole snake? And I'm sure that people in the Pentagon and the State Department are mulling these things over. I have no doubt of that. And my principles against going in and shooting up the place have nothing to do with defending Barack Obama. In fact, I think it will be easier for him to say yes than to say no. And believe me, the people who want him to say yes have made the situation so that it can be that way. We're talking about salesmanship here.
Right.
And so, you know, hey, Barack, you know, you need to go in and kill some Muslims by yourself just to prove you're not one of them.
Right.
Come on, that's a very cynical argument, but do you think that hasn't been made somewhere along the way? And I guess at the bottom of it all, there is some partisan politics involved, Andy, because any time, and I mean any time, anytime Newt Gingrich says he wants something, the very essence of my being says that whatever it is he wants has got to be wrong.
True.
And Newt Gingrich wants to go to war with Libya. And that's enough to, I mean, that by itself is enough to scare me off. You know, when the usual suspects start...
I understand anything out of Newt Gingrich's mouth, I would tend to think I would be on the opposite side of. Because Newt Gingrich is a bad, bad actor.
You know, when the John Boltons and the William the Bloody Crystal start coming out and repeating the usual lines.
Right.
Yeah, and can you hear it now? Can you,
motive.
Can you hear it
it's
now?
Probably oil.
Yeah, oil is the motive.
It's probably just, we want that oil for our transnational, for our oil companies.
You know, Bahrain has some importance as a terminal and a financial center and so forth. Nobody was calling for a no-fly zone in Bahrain.
We've got our Navy base there.
Yeah.
It's a Navy base.
But, you know, I can see it now. Well, you know, since we put down the rebellion in Libya, it's going to be our job to make sure that I get a good, stable government. And, hey, look, we can put in some military bases and have Iraq and Libya, and by God, you know what we need to do now? I mean, it's a shame to have all those people over there doing nothing. Let's invade Iran. That's the way these hawks and these murderers think, Andy.
All they
need is one sliver of toenail in the door, and there we go, and we're down, and we're down the hill.
I said no troops, no troops, no bodies. No American bodies there.
Sooner or later, sooner or later they'll put them down. If only as a peacekeeping force.
Real quick.
Huh?
Is it all right if I change the subject?
No, go right ahead.
Before I get off of here, I just want to mention, I've noticed a lot of things coming out about Dodd-Frank lately, you know, the financial reform legislation.
Right.
And it seems to really be getting watered down. Last week I noticed in the Financial Times, the Treasury Department came out and they're exempting what's called financial foreign exchange derivatives from the Frank Dodd. And that's supposed to be a big win for dealers in Wall Street to not have the derivatives. And that would be currency exchanges.
Right. And on the other side of that, you've got the Republicans saying, well, you know, screw it anyway. We're just not going to fund them so they can't do anything in the first place.
Right. And that whole funding thing, too, it kills me. You have Bernanke in there. You know, the Republicans want to knock off $61 billion. That's their proposal that they put forward. And I think this was really interesting. Goldman, you've probably seen this. Goldman Sachs comes out with a report. I think it was like on the 24th. And they say that if the Republicans get that $61 billion in cuts, that's going to cost 1.5% to 2% in GDP cut, gross domestic product cut,
yeah,
in the second or third quarter of this year. That's huge. When you knock off that much GDP.
Yeah, in a quarter?
Sandy of Moody's says that'll be 700,000 jobs. That's huge. If they do this 61-7, and Mark Zandi was John McCain's economic advisor because he's a Moody's economist, Mark Zandi. 700,000, and I've heard between 500,000 and 1 million jobs if they go with this Republican baloney. Then you have Bernanke. I thought this was interesting. You have Goldman Sachs coming out with this 1.5%, 2% cut, and Zandi coming out with his numbers. And then you have Bernanke, who's supposed to be a guy Obama puts in there. He said, oh, don't worry. The deficit's the most important thing. We have to lower the deficit. And that $61 billion won't hurt us that much. Maybe a few percentage points off of GDP. Now, who are you supposed to believe? Goldman Sachs? Or Ben Bernanke, the guy who couldn't even predict told us the subprime crisis was not going to hurt us at all. It will not bring us into a recession. And that's Obama's man, Ben Bernanke, saying the Republican $61 billion cut won't be that bad. Unbelievable to me. Here's Obama's guy, the guy he put in there, going against what Goldman Sachs is saying, trying to undermine Goldman Sachs. And I wouldn't doubt either with the Goldman Sachs thing. I think Warren Buffett might have had something to do with telling Goldman to do some things positive for the working people of this country, like floating that report out there, actually saying, you know, the truth that, yeah, you cut $61 billion from discretionary spending. It is going to hurt. It will hurt, and it will cause jobs. And then you have Bernanke taking the other stance. I think that is really strange, you know.
It's
really interesting,
but it provides two different perspectives for people to get screwed by, because neither one is fully accurate. It's going to be worse than 500,000 jobs, and it'll be more than a few percentage points off GDP. It's
right.
But this is all, some of this is smoke and mirrors. I'm sure you saw the jobs numbers that came out the other day that said we added a net 192,000 jobs.
Sounds right.
Well, actually the whole number we added 222,000 jobs.
No,
this was not the revision. These are the raw numbers. They'll revise them next month.
Right, and previous month's numbers were better.
Yeah, but the thing that was telling out of this, Andy, was we added a total of 222,000 jobs, and whenever I hear that, the first thing I think is, gosh, how many of those are the minimum wage Walmart kind of jobs? Because we're not adding massive manufacturing jobs, no matter how badly we need to, and no matter how much the green economy potential is sitting there going, you know, we could do that. We don't do that. So there were 222,000 jobs added, but there were 30,000, and this is, when I heard it, I went, brr. There were 30,000 government jobs eliminated.
Right.
That's how they got to that net 192.
Well, you know what bugs me? When Reagan did his big early 1980s, when he was in tough straits, when the unemployment rate was like 10.5 or 10.7%, it was a huge unemployment rate that he had to bring down in the early 80s, and he stuck to his guns with his economic policy, and he did get the numbers down. But the advantage he had is he was throwing tons of money at the government and at Star Wars and at the military, and he was growing the deficit like crazy, and local government and federal government was expanding like crazy, helping him bring that over 10% unemployment rate down. Now Obama's doing it. And what are the fascists, these pig Republicans, doing to him? They are killing local government and killing...
Right, because they understand that it worked for Reagan, right. And they're damn sure going to make sure that it doesn't work for him.
Reagan had this huge advantage. We're helping him bring down those numbers and making him look like a friggin' all-star, which he never was and never will be, but making him look like a star because the government was helping him out.
But consider who did that, Andy.
Obama's fighting a friggin' uphill, up-the-river battle because it's going the opposite way.
Right. Consider the political dynamics involved. One of the stories that the Tweety Matthews loves to tell is about how, you know, you could disagree with Ronald Reagan, and at the end of the day, he'd get together with Tip O'Neill, and they'd shake hands and have a drink. And
I can't stand listening to Chris Matthews.
Well, me either, but there's an element of truth in it. The fact of the matter is, the Democratic Party that was in control of the House of Representatives, they had a genuine desire to see the economy get well.
No, Tip O'Neill sold us out.
And as a consequence, they worked with and enabled Ronald Reagan to do what he did. Now, Barack Obama has the exact opposite situation, and the Republicans won't work with him to save their miserable souls.
Right. And what Tip O'Neill should be remembered for is doubling down on the payroll tax on the middle and lower class of this country, everybody making under $96,000, instead of paying 6% for the Social Security, the payroll tax. Mr. Tip O'Neill went and did a deal with Reagan to double that to 12%. Which has really hurt us. Instead, he could have gone where maybe upping that limit from the, and I think it's 106 because they had it raised for inflation. I think it's 106 now, the max you're paying into the payroll tax. But instead of going after that and moving that up to maybe 150 or the $200,000 range before it got cut off, no, they doubled it from 6% to 12% on the people making under $96,000 at the time. He sold us out. The Democrats sold out the working class by doing that. And that's what Mr. Matthews should be harping on. It was that sellout. And instead, you know, they will never.
And it all inured.
Their $107,000 limit is all they have to do, and they won't do that.
No, they will not. And all of that inured to the benefit of Ronald Reagan, so that here in this day, you've even got Democrats like Barack Obama talking about how he was a great communicator, and he transformed the American political landscape.
That's what I hate. That's why I hate Obama. I'm hating him immensely, because what he is he reinforces the Reagan legacy. We don't need any Democrats reinforcing Reagan, but he continually does it and builds him up to what he is not, because he was nothing. All he was a destroyer and helped for the destruction of the middle class of this country, and Obama keeps building him up and heaping this false praise on Reagan, and I can't stand it. It makes me just want to vomit. It really does.
I can't stand the mention of the man's name.
It makes me sick to my stomach to hear Obama keep on praising him and give him these false accolades when he should be doing it for Roosevelt. Who, matter of fact, Reagan even worshipped Roosevelt, actually thought Roosevelt was one of his heroes. So.
Well, that's because Roosevelt's policies saved his little Depression-era ass.
Right.
And even Reagan recognized that.
I know my grandfather was on really tough times. Had 6 kids. Without Roosevelt, man, some of them might have died.
Exactly.
Like my father, because they were starving.
Saved a lot of America.
This Dodd-Frank thing where this is being cut is the credit agencies. I noticed this weekend they have this law. They're using First Amendment rights when they come out with an opinion on a credit rating, like it's AAA or Double B. It's a freedom of speech issue. They're not liable for it. But in most other business-oriented issues, there is a liability when you make a claim because it could be fraud or something like that.
Right.
And the Dodd-Frank did change that, where no longer could the credit agencies rely on a First Amendment right of their opinion, and they couldn't be have any litigation assessed against that opinion. Dodd-Frank changed that and said, you are liable. If you come out with a credit rating and it's deemed to be a fraud, then you are liable and you can be litigated against. Well, the SEC under Mary Shapiro, who was just a corporate hack, a Wall Street hack, gave the credit agencies a reframe from having to abide to that in Dodd-Frank. And now she's given it like a permanent out of that portion of Dodd-Frank, where, again, they're not liable at all
for
the credit rating opinion, which is a joke. They have to be liable for it. They have, because it's fraud. Because they are the ones that caused this whole credit crisis debacle by putting AAA ratings on mortgage-backed securities that should have never been rated AAA. But they're exempted again.
While we're sort of working these topics, something came out that I didn't get to Friday that just kind of, well, frankly, it surprised the daylights out of me. Did you see the decision that the Supreme Court reached in Federal Communications Commission versus AT&T?
Wasn't that something with some of its rivals were looking to get a FOIA?
Yeah. Well, the upshot of it is that
in kind of a Citizens United sort of.
It was AT&T was using a Citizens United defense, saying that because FOIA provides exemptions for personal privacy, that since AT&T is a person, AT&T is entitled to the exemption for personal privacy. And lo and behold, and I'm looking through it trying to find out how this works against us. So far, I haven't. And this is the interesting part. It was a unanimous ruling. It was a 9-0 in which the justices said, no, just because you're a corporate person does not mean you have personal privacy. And no, you cannot claim exemptions under FOIA for it.
Yeah, it seemed to fly in the face directly of Citizens United with corporate personhood, which, of course, is a good thing.
And my theory on it, Andy, is that even John Roberts, with those dead blue eyes of his, even John Roberts has figured out that they went too far with Citizens United. And that, you know, and that this country might very well just go absolutely apeshit if they had sided with AT&T.
You know, it's got to happen. It's got to happen. Like, places, guys like Scott, you know, the governor, Scott Walker of Wisconsin, when they cannot go to restaurants, when they cannot go out in public, because I did hear that he went to a restaurant
and was asked to leave, yes.
Right, was asked because there was too much of a disturbance in the restaurant because people didn't want that MF-er in their effing presence, right?
Right.
When John Roberts and Mr. Scalia and Mr. Thomas find out the American public do not want them in their presence in any way, shape, or form, that they're berated, where things maybe are thrown at them, where invectives are thrown at them, when they cannot walk around in public, maybe they'll get the message.
And you know, that's what I've advocated for years, is that people spit on the street at the mention of their names, and
right.
Mothers hide their children's faces from even viewing them.
We have to go after these people and make it so they're uncomfortable in public.
And, you know,
and
Jonathan Turley,
France.
Jonathan Turley is no liberal and can never have been accused of being one. And yet there he is now, conservative lawyer that he is. Jonathan Turley, Brad Friedman broke this earlier. Jonathan Turley has called for the Slappy Thomas to be removed from the court. Not for him to step down, but to be removed from the court.
Oh, absolutely. He kept all those 20 years worth of tax information about his wife's business working for the conservative think tanks.
Right. And you know, if you make that mistake 1 year and the next year you correct it, then you can make the argument, Andy, well, you know, I screwed up. It was inadvertent at most. But when you do it for 20 years running, it's kind of hard to fly that defense. We've got them all stacked up, but it's been a great conversation, Andy. You have a great night, and this has been a good one.
You know, he was Monsanto's corporate lawyer.
Oh yeah, I know. That's why. Yeah, he was licensed in Missouri, where Monsanto is, and that's why there is at present a petition before the state bar of Missouri to disbar Clarence Thomas.
Right. Well, thanks for bearing with me, Bob. I know it's a little
No. It's okay. I mean, I think it's more than appropriate that we work through this stuff, even if we don't necessarily come to an answer.
All right. front. You know, I just hate to see people getting their heads blown off when maybe we can help.
Amen to that. Amen to that. And we could possibly help. I just don't know if we do it with bullets. You take care, Andy.
All right, you too, Bob.
Bye. Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita, what's up?
I've got a few little opinions and a few little questions.
Okie dokie. Well, let's try them all, or as many as we can get to.
Okay. It won't take me long, I don't think. Freedom of speech for the people who, what did they do, demonstrate at the funeral of a fallen soldier?
Right, the Westboro Baptist people.
Okay. What does it mean when we have a protest? Maybe there's no speech, but a silent protest. Is that considered freedom of speech?
Well, they weren't necessarily, they were largely silent. The Westboro Baptist creeps were standing there with signs, and they weren't necessarily hooting or hollering. They weren't using a bullhorn. They were on the public sidewalk, and that's why the court found the way it did.
Then, don't you, sometimes they sing, don't they?
I'm not. I haven't had the stomach to watch enough of their protest and to be able to answer that.
Well, I'm just wondering though, how does that benefit other forms of freedom of speech?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, does that include Cindy's protest in the name of her son that was killed in Iraq?
It absolutely should.
Yes, it should. How does that make?
But she was repeatedly arrested now, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. I heard a good name for Huckle. What's his name?
Oh, Huckabee.
Yeah. Huckleberry Fibb.
Huckleberry Fibb.
That's good.
I like that a lot. Who came up with that one?
Who said that? Tweety Pie.
Oh, well, listen, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then.
Yeah. And, okay, I want to ask that because I've asked it before, but I need. Okay. Now, suppose that we couldn't get all the oil we need. And we've been told that it would take maybe 25 years to get a solar and windmill and all like that. Why couldn't we do like we did in World War II?
And ration?
And do it. And get it done. They build all those.
Well, areas. part of the reason we can't do that, Juanita, is because we had, you know, we went from the Depression into the Second World War, but while we had a Depression on, we still had an industrial manufacturing base. And so all we had to do was ramp it up and get it going. And we did it in a surprisingly brisk fashion.
Amen. Very much.
Well, we don't have that anymore. The factories were literally torn down, put in boxes, and mailed to China. We don't have an industrial manufacturing base. All the steel mills that were used for the steel that was necessary to win World War II, the steel mills in Pittsburgh and Wheeling and Birmingham and elsewhere, they're gone. There are great big flat pieces of ground where they used to be.
Yeah.
Our steel industry is a wraith. It is a shadow of its former self.
But could they at least try?
Well, if you'd like to play baseball, but you don't have a bat and a ball, you can try.
Yeah.
But you will have a hard time actually playing baseball.
You could get you a stick and a rock or something.
Right, and you know that's how it got played in the streets of the cities, but. We're out of balls, we're out of bats, we're out of sticks, and we're out of rocks.
When I was growing up, that happened a lot.
It can be done, Juanita, but the point is, this is the kind of thing that requires an act of national will expressed by the people through their government.
Yeah. Right, right.
And the government is not much interested in listening to the people. And if we talk about a green economy and solar power, see, the reason that the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil and all of those thugs put so much effort into defeating the very idea of acknowledging the reality of a global climate catastrophe has nothing to do with the esoteric the question of whether the scientists are right or wrong. The scientists are right. The reason they spent all that money on denying global warming is because if we divert our attention to actually working on sustainable energy and to do it with the urgency of a Second World War or a Manhattan Project, the oil and coal companies are doomed. They're doomed because oil is not necessary if you build a sustainable power grid.
Well,
it becomes absent. And so all those rich people stop getting richer. Look, for instance, one of the notable and respectable things that Barack Obama mentioned in his State of the Union address, Juanita, was when he said, "Let's take away the subsidies on big oil." Based on the profits statements I've seen, they seem to be doing okay without them. Remember when he said that?
Oh yeah, uh-huh.
There was some follow through on that, and the Republicans in Congress, who are wholly owned creatures of big oil, big coal, big pollution, promptly made sure that while they were in a budget cutting frenzy, while they're willing to cut out the poison control center, while they're willing to cut working people's salaries, while they're willing to freeze federal workers' pay. By golly, those welfare payments to the oil and coal industry kept right on, the checks kept right on coming. So do you see what I'm saying?
To let us die. They want to let the old people die, and they don't care the other people. They'll just work to death.
Well, you know what Alan Grayson said, die quickly. Die quickly.
And then all they got to do is bring some people from overseas. There's plenty of people. Expendable.
Yes, we are. Because there are other. Because again, the idea of globalism says that it doesn't matter what's going on in your country. You can always sell to people in what are called emerging markets. You know, there's a reason my county's going to be blown to kingdom come to send coal to India, because India is an emerging market, and it's all about the markets. It's always about the markets.
I saw, did you see your senator on TV?
Oh, dear God, no. What?
Well, he's...
Which one, Jay Rockefeller or Blanche Manchin?
Blanche Manchin. He's criticizing Obama.
Oh, of course he is.
We're not being leading properly.
Yeah, because that Joe, he knows all about the leading.
Oh yeah.
Let me throw one pathetic. Let me throw one more moment of wackiness at you, and this is this stuff takes me off into the realm of Art Bell and George Norrie and Alex Jones even. There are literally billions of people in China. That nation is horribly overcrowded.
Yeah.
You said a few minutes ago, we here have become expendable.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this would not be the first time that the North American continent had been depopulated in order to be repopulated by people from another continent. You might recall that the estimates now state that the Americas were actually the most populous part of the planet in 1492. There were more people in North and South America than there were in Asia or Europe or Africa.
We got rid of them.
Well, white Europeans came over, and through guns, disease, torment, torture, murder, depopulated an entire continent so that it could be repopulated by white Europeans.
Yeah.
Well, what's to say that the transnationals in the long run look at it and say, well, you know, if North America winds up getting a little bit depopulated, that's cool, because that just gives the Chinese a little bit of room to expand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm not being paranoid or anything like that, and I'm not saying that that's anybody's overt plan, but, you know, maybe that's the way stuff works out. There was no overt plan to depopulate the Americas the first time.
I don't know. It makes more and more sense as time goes by. As more and more things, it's crazier and crazier. And you were talking about the right to work law. There's a Republicans going to put it up to be nationwide, even though he believes in states' rights. But And I want to say something about Pete King. And his
Well, he's sickening.
I mean, this goes without saying. Why don't we've got people here, homegrown.
Homegrown, yeah.
White folks.
Well, and you know, Jude pointed some of that out, too. She said, while Peter King's investigating the Muslims, the homegrown Muslim terrorists, why doesn't he investigate some of those homegrown Christian terrorists while he's at it?
That's right. That's right. But no. And, you know, one time, this was before 9/11, here in Florida, they kept him from doing it. But this guy was head of some kind of white supremacist group here. We've got a lot of them here in Florida.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
He was going to destroy our water supply from Miami or maybe as far as Key West to all the way up to Alabama and Georgia. And he got, you know, he got caught, and it didn't happen. But we've got plenty of those people. It only takes one or two anyway to do something. And we got a bunch of them here already. It's not just Muslims.
And there's a whole, well, not only is it not just Muslims, Juanita, what needs to be borne in mind is it's not just Muslims, and there are a heck of a lot more Christians who want to do these things than there ever will be Muslims in this country.
These people, a lot of them claim to be Christians.
Right.
They claim to be.
And they're doing it for Jesus.
Yeah. Well, that Walker, I read an article about him, and it sounded great what he believed about Jesus. But he don't mind getting up there and lying his head off about what every time.
Well, that's
these people get up, they lie.
Well, and I think that's the point, Juanita. He thinks he's hearing Jesus. He's actually hearing David Koch.
Hearing Satan.
There you go.
His true God. And then guess who was on the Washington Journal? I guess it was maybe Saturday or Sunday. I don't know.
I'm almost afraid to ask. Oh, Frank Luntz, of course. Hey.
He's written the last book he'll ever write because he said it all. It's how to express yourself and how to succeed. He's got all these things.
Oh, can he just walk into the sea and not walk back out now?
People called, you know, and he's always got something snarly to say. Only says it like he's being really nice. One man called and told him he was the American Goebbels. And he said, well, you know, I really resent that because that I'm Jewish. Well,
too bad, Frank.
If he was really a real Jew, I mean, wouldn't he not tell lies? These people lie their heads off.
Yeah, well, you know, I just file that under if the shoe fits.
Right, but yeah.
Well, Juanita, I've got to run because we are stacked up, and I'm going to try to get as many of these calls in before.
I want to know one more thing.
Okay.
What kind of shoes does Obama need to go to Wisconsin?
I don't know, but they must be awful hard to find.
They must be. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he's probably a size 12, size 13. We're about the same height and stuff. Yeah. Maybe he's a Ford. Surely, yeah, he can find those comfortable shoes to walk in Wisconsin, right? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm getting along.
I have to take issue with Andy.
Okay.
All over the place. First of all, Bernanke is not Obama's choice. It was dim sum who put him in. He succeeded.
But wasn't he reconfirmed under Obama?
Oh, yeah, he was reconfirmed, but he was initially installed under...
Because was it Ben Bernanke that Bernie Sanders tried to hold up just a little bit, and Harry Reid came down on him like a hot rock?
Basically. Yeah. And I really, 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 really have to take issue with Andy over, we got to do something. People are dying. People are dying anyway.
Well, that much is true. But I also understand where Andy's coming from, because it's hard to look at this and not think that there ought to be some solution that the United States of America could put forward and make work.
Well, the only solution we have is how much tonnage can we get on target? That we have lost whatever negotiating skills we ever had. All we do now is use brute force, and that is our answer to everything. So kind of like, you know, he was declaiming with all kinds of pride the wonderful things we did in Kosovo. People were dying there. Yeah, you remember the 100,000 dead Kosovars buried in the Prishtina Stadium? The 100,000 that weren't there? They were supposed to find bodies under every rock. And the total number of bodies they managed to find in Kosovo on all sides was less than 2,000. That people didn't start running away from Kosovo until the bombs started falling on their head. You know, it's real easy to sit out here and, we got to do something. Oh, we can't use troops. Well, do you know that we lost people during Kosovo? People forget that during the Kosovo conflict, there were an unusually high number of fatal training accidents. And if you think about it, the way we do things, since it's a for-hire army, essentially, most of the people, especially during the Kosovo conflict, who were in the army, were there as a means of the poverty draft.
Sure. That's the nature of a volunteer military.
Correct. And a lot of these people had no one back home to worry about them. They didn't. Many of them did not have intact families. Many of them, they could disappear and no one would be the wiser. And for the rest, that's your training accidents.
And you know, the massive use of the National Guard wasn't there like it was in Iraq and Afghanistan. But the larger point, I think, is that, and I go back to Dennis Kucinich on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody from the cruise missile liberals to the right wingers just snickered up their sleeves when he said, you know, we really do need a Department of Peace. We need a cabinet level secretary devoted to peace and what it takes to maintain a peace and have peace. And everybody, ha ha, listen to him. He's liberal. He's how about that? He's vegetarian, I'll bet. Hadn't he seen a UFO? But the fact of the matter is the United States is in a position, because of the money we spend on our military, Cossack, that it's a case of that old, what's that old saying, that if all your problems look like nails, all your solutions will look like hammers?
Yeah.
Okay. Or vice versa, something. I always screw that up. But whether I screw it up or not, it's true. And we don't have an overt mechanism for avoiding war. I mean, that was supposed to be the Department of State's job, but you know, not really, not so much. And beyond that, the biggest problem with U.S. intervention in Libya is that we have never had that meaningful a relationship with Libya.
Correct.
if someone's going to intervene in Libya, it needs to be people who have working relationships with Libya.
Yeah.
Because those are going to be people on the people on the ground can actually work with and talk to, because that pre-existing relationship, the value of it cannot be overestimated.
Correct. And, you know, he was talking about, well, I hear it on the BBC. I hear it on the BBC. Well, yeah, and if he'll remember, the BBC was all on fire about Kosovo. We got to blast the Serbs back into the Stone Age. We've got to teach these people a lesson. That's why they're bombing hospitals 600 miles away from the scene of the action.
Right, and the water treatment plants in places like Belgrade. No, Kosovo is nowhere to point to formulate American successful foreign policy, be it by warfare or other means. I don't, like I said, I think it's the same inclination. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, Cossack, how sickened I was when the Taliban blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas.
Right.
And it's because of the kind of nature that I have. You know, I have a respect for cultural treasures that belong not to individuals but to humanity writ large. And I remember when that happened, one of the things that went through my mind is, you know what, I would not mind if we went in and just slaughtered the living daylights out of the Taliban for that alone, for that by itself. And I pulled myself back and went, what in the hell are you saying? Because it was a gut reaction.
Right.
And see, I don't see warfare. Well, as our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien says, he says, I've never been much into military history, because as far as I'm concerned, when the shooting starts, the history ends.
Yeah.
And I've thought a lot about what he said about that over time, because I have a fascination for military history and things like that. But I think he's right.
Yeah.
Military action is what happens when we give up.
Correct.
Screw it. We're just, you know, military action is what happens when we say, you know what, we really are. We're just monkeys dancing around the monolith with the bloody bone. Let's just dance.
We are. That's the problem.
And so
we don't want to admit it either.
You know, I would hope that there are better minds than mine, kind of have to be, working on how to come to some sort of a resolution of the problem in Libya that doesn't involve dropping more bombs on more brown people.
Right.
Because, the murder, and let's call it what it was, Cossack, the murder of those 9 Afghan boys is fresh in my mind, and many others, I would hope. And finding another place to do that some more, because you know what? A no-fly zone, what are we going to use in that? We're going to use drones.
Yeah.
And so we'll just start, you know, we will do, and the video game joystick jockeys who run those things are going to be no better at it in Libya than they are in Afghanistan or have been in Iraq.
Absolutely.
Because it's a goddamn video game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't see any situation where that works. Unless you want to put on a full-scale invasion. And once you've done that, you just go, well, you know, okay, we are the Roman Empire. Screw it.
Yeah.
Welcome to Carthage.
Essentially what we've become. And we didn't pay attention when people were warning us. It's a little bit late now.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, and when we disagree among ourselves, I always hope that it will be in a spirit of goodness and a spirit of seeking and searching. Because, well, we are all on the same path going in the same direction. And sometimes we will have disagreements about whether we start with our left foot or our right in the march.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, what comes to me, you know, Richard Holbrooke, what a horrible person. Well, Richard Holbrooke was the guy behind Kosovo, you idiot.
Nah, you just said no. Don't call people idiots, Cossack.
Until people start learning to understand the topic they're speaking of, if they sound like idiots, I'm going to address them as something.
Yeah, but I'm not going to play that game on. I'm not going to do that with the horn.
I know.
This is family.
True. Call my brother an idiot all the time, and he returns the favor. But the problem of it is, we always have this desire to do something. Well, sometimes doing something is worse than doing nothing.
There's that old story that comes out of, I guess it was Joseph Papp's Origins of Theater in the Park in New York City. And it was during the days of the debate between method acting and traditional, classically trained British actors. And the story goes that there was a spear carrier in Hamlet or something. No lines, just, he had no lines. He was a spear carrier. You know, these guys appear in the script, enter four spear carriers.
Right.
And so the method actor spear carrier, who had no lines and no purpose except to be a spear carrier, was at the back of the stage while the scene was going on, and he was emoting up a storm, and he was living the internal life of a spear carrier, and he was in the moment. And so when the director's giving notes at the end of the play, and I'm probably messing it up somewhere along the way, but he's giving notes at the end of the play, and he says, oh, and spear carrier number three, God damn it, man, don't just do something, stand there.
Yeah.
And sometimes there is truth in don't just do something, stand there. And that's that, you know, those are two competing philosophies, because another great philosopher of whom I am quite fond, the late William Paul Bear Bryant, had a different sign hanging in his locker room that said, make something happen.
Yeah.
You know, do it right, do it wrong, but make something happen, which is the exact opposite of don't just do something, stand there.
Correct. And
that will always be, those will all be always be the two competing dynamics in any sort of world politics situation that arises. There will be those who want, you know, for instance, in Libya, a no-fly zone, and then there will be me and others like me who fail to see any long-term benefit by dropping bombs on people.
Correct. And, you know, Andy was so worked up about, oh, yeah, the civil, fine, if it's a civil war, let it be a civil war. You have no room in there. For example, what would Andy have said if the English had joined the Civil War on the side of the Confederacy, which they almost did?
Yeah.
Would that be a good idea? Hmm.
Well, and that's, you know, and that's the one thing I really did not want to do is refight the Civil War. Hey, Cossack, I got a roll, brother. I'm going to hit a couple more, but good call.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye now.
Right. Bye-bye.
From North Florida, that's the Cossack. Onward we go. No. Oh, quickly, before I go any further, a couple of emails from the email bag. We have stepped in, says Kate, to save them from the evil regime so many times in the past. How many civil wars do we have to stick the U.S.'s noses and guns and penises into before we learn to mind our own business? Are all these folks who advocate butting in, are they willing to send their sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, moms, and dads over there, destroy the country, village, to save lives? Why don't we ask the women on this, the 100th International Women's Day? I heard a woman say this morning that she was willing for her sons and husband to do whatever it takes to free her people from this tyranny. We're all going to die. Sometimes we get to choose the hill we want to do it on. In other words, I take it from Kate, let the Libyans solve a Libyan problem. William writing in saying, I have to admit I'm completely lost as can be. Not one damn thing makes sense to me at all any longer. We absolutely have no leadership and a muck-up of what we call a government. I thought at one point during Clinton we were finally climbing out of this deep hole, and yet now we're in deeper than I've seen in my lifetime. We were done with wars, I thought. I'm really beginning to miss the past more and more. I feel the high-tech road has done more damage than good, and for many reasons, too many to list. Is it now this country has to completely fail and fall before there's any shot at all of getting better, or is this just a peak at the end? There's never been a bomb drop that's changed anything for the better. Bombs and chemical toxins in a mixing bowl brought forth to create death by some madman. Cooking in a lab is no different than cooking meth and expecting a good outcome. Agent Orange, depleted uranium, biological chemicals, all began here. How comforting. And that's the only place I'll take issue. Because it was, I believe, a German scientist who discovered the less than salutary effects of nitrates. Andy writing in on the other side of this question, he says, tell Cossack and Srebrenica, 8,000 Bosnians killed in 1995 massacre alone, a little more than 2,000 killed, matter of fact, a lot more through the genocide we tried to stop. I respect Cossack's views, but there were atrocities in a lot of them. Yes, I agree we did make a lot of mistakes and overplayed our air power on the Serbs, but maybe we did end this faster than if it ran its own course. People were asking for our help then and now. And maybe we're just not the people to ask to be asking for the help. Maybe there are others with established relationships who may be better able to do it with less bloodshed. Just saying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark, your union brother, who's not going to cry tonight.
Oh, yeah, don't worry about it, Mark. Don't worry about it at all. It was a great call, brother.
I'm sorry to call so late. I work 13-and-a-half-hour shifts. But
ouch.
The coal mine, you know, but coal mines would, you know, I just would, there's so many things. You know, the most dangerous president America's probably had in intelligence would be even though I'm from Abe Lincoln's hometown, I'd be President James Carter. James Carter graduates from the U.S. Naval Academy, which most Republicans don't know where it is. If they could buy it, they would. And he ends up working for Admiral Rickover, and I think for quite a few years, and he could not really take it anymore. And so, like very smart people, so no matter where they're from, north or south, he went home and chilled out. And, you know, President Carter didn't want to be a politician, but the people in Plains, Georgia knew he had integrity, and they kind of begged him to go up against a corrupt sheriff, which apparently somehow President Carter, being good at numbers from working with Admiral Rickover, learned how to devise a technique to see how people steal elections. But, you know, I was just a Marine, so I don't really know anything. So, but I just left the 18-city rallies here in Florida, Bob, and I left my nuclear power plant at about 1,400 hours for those civilian types, as we'd say in my Marine Corps, and we had a tremendous showing. Three cities in Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete, and downtown Tampa. There were 18 cities from Pensacola to Ocala, where I live, Bob, and Miami had three rallies, and not to confuse the listeners, that does not include Fort Lauderdale, which had a couple. It was a national effort to stand up for the evil terrorists known as firemen and school teachers. And for the right-wingers, there are 1,000 million in a billion. So, you know, they don't know that, so they keep voting for a Sarah Palin who can see Canada from her house in Russia. So, you know, I don't know what, Bob. I just want you to know that I get a little fatigued, and I drink a little white wine, and I overstate my true emotions. But you are a really neat American, and you are the American that my 11 years in the Marine Corps thought I was defending. And anybody that sympathizes with you and your listeners' civility, I wish that they realize how precious that is. The whole world looks at us Americans and our ability to communicate with each other, I suppose, more so, or to the world. And because if we cannot get along, no matter where we are from in America, from Guyana or Guinea or from Scotland or Wales, if we can't get it on here politely and appropriately, no one else will be able to admire America. And I would share with the listeners, the Koch brothers' wealth goes back to apparently financing the Bolsheviks' rise to power. I would ask Americans to please take a look at Daniel Yergin's book, The Prize. And that'll show that the Germans didn't have synthetic oil like they do at the gas stations now today in America for your cheap oil, which probably is not as good as real oil. Not a fan of oil, nor nuclear power, but that's where I work. I would ask Americans to realize Germans had synthetic fuel, kind of like the Brazilians have finally developed synthetic fuel. So that's why the Americans bombed that synthetic fuel plant 3,000 times in Germany. It's in Daniel Yergin, the leading oil expert in the world's book.
Wow.
Am I missing anything, Bob?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, the only thing we've got to make happen here is that we get you in the, something besides the last 4 minutes of the program. We've got to have an extended conversation, Mark, and I look forward to it. And bless your heart for the kind words you said about me and about the Horn family, because that has the air of making it all worthwhile, my friend.
I'm sorry you missed your daughter's thing, and I sacrifice. It doesn't lessen anyone else's pain. But our sacrifices, Bob, will hopefully pay off for your daughter and mine. So I apologize.
No, you need not. Brother, you have a good evening, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
Yes, brother. No problem.
Take care now.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye, Mark. Mark calling from Florida. And that takes us to the end of the show. Thank you, everybody, all of you who make all of this so very, very special. The fact that we can agree without becoming disagreeable, I think, is very, very important. We saw an example of that tonight. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch, who helped to make the website. Well, they don't help. They do. They make the website and the streams all do what websites and streams are supposed to do, and it all makes it... It makes for this little man-made miracle that we human-made miracle that we have every night that we call the Horn. Thanks also always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, who have taught me so much of what I need to know about being able to stand up in my own community. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.